It's time for Windows Weekly. Paul Thurrott's here. Mary Jo Foley's here. And lo and behold, they both have new phones. Galaxy Note 20s. And what is that I see in Mary Jo's hand? A Microsoft Surface Duo? There's only a few things you can talk about, but she will be talking about that. We'll also celebrate the 25th birthday of Windows 95 with some reminiscing and some Xbox news, too. It's all coming up next on Windows Weekly. Windows Weekly comes to you from Twit's LastPass Studios. Securing every access point in your company doesn't have to be a challenge. LastPass unifies access and authentication to make securing your employees simple and secure, even when they're working remotely. Check out LastPass.com/twit to learn more.
Podcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
This is Windows Weekly with Paul Thurrott and Mary Jo Foley. Episode 687, recorded Wednesday, August 26th, 2020. Duo FOMO. This episode of Windows Weekly is brought to you by Adobe Sign. Business needs to keep moving, whether people are working together or apart. With Adobe Sign, working remote actually works. Learn more about what Adobe Sign can do for your business at adobe.com/businessmoves. And by ExpressVPN. ExpressVPN is ridiculously fast. You can stream everything in HD quality with zero buffering. For 3 extra months free with a 1-year package, go to expressvpn.com/windows. And by ZipRecruiter. Hiring is challenging, especially with everything else you have to consider today, but there's one place you can go where hiring is simple and fast and smart. That place is ZipRecruiter. Try ZipRecruiter free at ZipRecruiter.com/windows. ZipRecruiter, the smartest way to hire. It's time for Windows Weekly, the show where we cover the latest news from Microsoft. Paul Thurrott is here from Thurrott.com. Mary Jo Foley's here from ZDNet, all about Microsoft.com. And somebody has some new phones in their possession. Hello, Mary Jo. Actually, you both have the new... can I mention this, Samsung?
Yeah, sure.
Both have the new Samsung. Did you get the Ultra, the Note 20 Ultra?
Yeah.
Wow.
I haven't even opened the box yet. Have you?
Look, I can show it.
Do you like it? Look at that. It looks like Cthulhu with all those eyes.
It's approximately 7 inches thick.
That camera bump is ridiculous.
Yeah.
That's actually...
It is. For several years, right, people have complained about camera bumps. Lumia 1020 on up. You know, and I never... Those never bothered me. This one... it's a little much.
Yeah.
It's a big bump.
It's a little much. Yeah. In fact, believe it or not, and this is how shallow I am, that's the sole reason I did not get one.
Really?
Yeah. Well, for the first time ever, I've owned every Note since the first one. And I looked at that camera bump and I said, that's a domino. That has no camera bump.
It is.
Somebody's exactly glued a domino on the back of that thing.
So, I mean, you know, a case would probably alleviate most of the problem.
Apparently it doesn't. I talked to Lexi Savitas from CNET. Yeah. And she said, yeah, I put a case on it. It's still wobbly.
But is the camera good? That's all I care.
It should be great. Yeah. The cameras are in the last.
Oh, yeah. They're always
Samsung,
good.
So
yeah.
They're really good. Yeah.
I'm kind of looking at the new Zenfone 6 Pro, which has a robotic camera. It goes, flips up, and then it can turn around. We got to the point where these cameras are a problem, accommodating them on a thin phone. So I understand that. But really,
I don't know if you saw it.
Go ahead.
Sorry. iFixit did a breakdown on this, and between the camera module and the S Pen, it's amazing they had room for a battery in this thing.
I know.
It's incredible. You should look at it if you haven't seen it. It's kind of interesting how much space the camera in particular takes up.
It does irk me that there's no headphone jack, but I guess that's asking too much. Nobody has a headphone jack.
The Pixel 4a has a headphone jack, and that thing costs $350.
I know, and everybody loves it, right?
I know. It got great reviews, like amazing reviews.
Yeah, I'm reviewing that one now, actually. It's
This is the worst time of year, isn't it, Paul?
It is conceivable that I will leave for the gym someday this week and take the wrong phone.
Yeah.
You know, and then I get out in the world, I'm like, what is this thing? Like, I don't even have connectivity, you know? I don't know.
But I don't care at all about that phone.
No, no, nobody does.
Because a certain Mary Jo Foley has the phone of my dreams. Look at it. It's so pretty. It's so pretty. It's a duo.
Here it is. Yep.
It's a duo.
So I had Brad do this earlier, but do you have your Pixel, whatever you have, 3 XL with you?
Yeah.
Handy.
Let's see.
So hold them up.
Oh, big difference.
Yeah. We'll put it on top of.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a lot wider.
Just to kind of show this.
That ain't going to fit in my. It'll fit in my Mr. Green jeans pockets. But
yeah, if you have painter pants.
Yeah, painter pants.
It's wide. It's really wide.
Vanilla Ice, maybe you have pants that will fit.
No. And then the question is, okay, fold it back. Would you use it as a phone? It's big.
Well, you'd have to. I mean, you have to.
Yeah, right. You have to use it that way, right? But, I mean, it's fairly heavy. It's like a half a pound.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
It's all thin. Glass.
It's thin, but it's heavy. Heavy sometimes means quality.
Good quality, right?
Wow.
I know. Wow. So when you open it up, it's 8.1 inches on the diagonal. So like a little mini tablet. Hmm. It closes very quietly. Like the hinge feels really nice, as you would expect, right?
As one solid. Would expect, yeah.
You know, it's funny seeing it remotely. I mean, I saw it in person at the event, but that doesn't, you know, it's not the same as kind of having it in your hands. It almost occurs to me that they should try a smaller version of it.
No, I like
thinner.
This size.
You mean?
Yeah, like, no, a version where when it's folded up, it is the size of a normal phone.
No, I want two phones side by side.
That's what it would be.
Yeah. Well, let me see. Now I understand you're both under embargo on some in some respects. So, okay, right. We're going to let Mary Jo continue. So put that next to your Pixel 3.
Yeah.
So that's just one side of it. See, it's wider than that. You could get all of Sirachi's head on it.
Yeah. So the reason I haven't got this turned on is there's a weird two-part embargo on the Duo. Like today we could say we got them and show that we had them, but we're not allowed to show the devices turned on until September 10th, which is the day they go on sale.
I'm so excited.
Yeah. So it's frustrating because everyone's like, can you check the camera? Can you do this? Can you do that? No, I can't
tell us.
Right.
Presumably you have, but you just can't say anything.
Nope. I have not even turned it on yet because I knew if I did, I would screw up.
Yeah, that's what I do. Yeah, you're right. I know exactly what you mean.
But we already know what it looks like. What are they
worried about? I know, we do. We do, right? You already know what the home screen looks like. We already know a lot of things about it, almost everything, right?
Well, you're a better man than I, though, because I would have to turn it on. I mean, you haven't turned it on.
Well, I will after the show.
Oh, okay.
After the show.
Okay. Okay.
Yeah. I just didn't want there to be any screw up or temptation to be like, all right, let me just turn it on for a second.
Yeah. So tempting. So tempting. Good for you.
And so here's how I got it, too. So we knew we were getting them today. Like they told me last week I was going to get one, and I was stunned when they told me that.
Yeah.
Because
last time we
talked,
you weren't sure.
Surface Review device. Yeah. No, I haven't gotten a Surface Review device in years, literally. Yeah. And so they're like, hey, you're going to be one of the people who get it, and it's going to come on Wednesday. And I'm like, what time on Wednesday? And they're like, we'll let you know. So this morning, I wake up at 7, and I hear my door buzzer go off downstairs, and I'm like, oh, boy, that's never good.
Hi, Mary, it's Panos Panay. I got something I want to drop off. Let me in.
I buzz the door, and I'm like, okay, let me get myself together here. And all of a sudden, I hear a knock on my door, and they came up in the elevator, and the guy's like, here, and he just hands me the box, and I'm like, 7 a.m. Wow. Okay.
Do you think they timed it like when you have fine dinner service and the waiters come and they take the lid off the plate all at the same time, that they timed that everyone who got one of these across the country at the same?
No, it didn't work like that.
They were delivered early.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, because I saw, like, I don't think Daniel Rubino had his, and it was like 10 a.m. or later, and he was like, I'm still waiting for mine. And I was like,
Tell us about the unboxing, because I've seen some unboxings. It looks pretty cool.
Yeah, so the box, I can show you the box. Hold on.
It's funny what you're allowed and not allowed to do.
It's funny. It's not the word I would use.
Okay.
But
okay. Well, I'm just happy that she's got one.
Yeah.
Kind of jealous. But that's okay.
No, she'll cut to the chase of it. So this box that you got, this is not the retail box, right? This is like a...
No.
It's
not a special box.
Ooh, wow. That's a big box.
I know. Slide it open
look at this. Oh, my God. Oh, my God.
Yeah. It's very unwieldy, right? And then, it's super hard to open this. This morning, I was like barely functional at 7 trying to open this. I'm like, how do you open this? let's see. How did I open it?
This is hysterical.
I know. It's super tricky. Oh, there we go. Okay. Maybe.
Wow.
There we go.
It is okay. A rather large box for such a small device.
I know.
Maybe it's to make you feel like the device is smaller. Oh, yeah. So it's a press kit, so it's got lots of information. Right.
Device box is here. We also got Surface earbuds that were here.
Nice. See, that's by the way, no one's going to hold that to their head. No. Ever.
Well, Surface earbuds don't come in the box with the retail version.
Yeah, but all of us by now have some sort of Bluetooth.
I guess so, but I don't wear that stuff out in the world all the time.
No.
I mean...
Yeah.
I just wear headphones when I'm at the gym, basically.
Yeah, so they gave us the new gray.
Nicely colored matched.
Yeah, she's got a white duo and gray headphones.
The charging cable is black.
Okay, so everything matches, which is really a thoughtful touch.
It's kind of weird, right? I was like, oh.
They don't.
And then we get a little note from Panos. I think hand signed by Panos. Everybody get a little note.
Hi, Mary Jo. It's PP. Just want to say
I'm pumped. Are you?
If you would give us a positive review and
the P stands for
avoid
pump.
The downs stuff.
Yeah.
No, it's just a generic, like, we hope you take the time to review this, blah, blah, blah. You know,
nice.
That.
Nice.
Yeah.
I'm very jealous. I'm really, I still stand by. It's funny. I finally talked to somebody else who's excited about this phone. Devinder Hardawar of Engadget said he thinks it's really interesting. He probably has his too by now. But everybody else, all the reviews made me feel bad about buying it.
Why?
Because they said, you'd be stupid to buy this. And the reason.
Right.
Yeah, but that's true of the Note Ultra. It's like, you'd be stupid to buy it. It's like $1,300.
Yeah. That was one complaint. And then it's not waterproof. Okay, I don't drop my phone in the toilet ever. So, okay. It doesn't have wireless charging. I admit that's a negative. But, you know, I can live with that.
Right.
It doesn't have NFC. That's not a big deal at all because I have an iPhone. So.
but that's not. Most people hopefully would just use this as their phone, I guess.
Yeah.
I mean,
No, I understand. Yeah. And NFC is nice, especially in nowadays, because you don't have to touch anything to buy stuff. But still, I don't think those are deal breakers.
Yeah, I don't either. For me, those wouldn't be deal breakers. The camera quality is
camera
what I'm
would
very
be
curious
problem.
About.
And we should
that would be
honestly the size. I mean, that's why I mentioned the...
Yeah.
You know, if this was like the size of Mary Jo's phone doubled when it opened, I mean, that at least would be pocketable.
A thinner size, right? Yeah.
Yeah.
Right. And we should mention that you have not tried the camera, just in case.
I have not.
Just in case Panos is listening.
I have not yet.
Not, so she has nothing to report on that camera.
I don't.
We're just worried. I don't know. Yeah. I think a decent camera is fine. I think nowadays there's a certain review army point of view that's very spec-driven. Yeah. Like, oh, well, the Note 20 and the iPhone have better cameras, so this is no good.
I know.
And I don't...
No.
Everybody
has the things that matter to them, right?
Right. Can you cut your volume just a little bit, Mary Jo? It's a little bit clippy. And when I say clippy, I don't mean... Hi, it looks like you're trying to do a podcast. Can I help? Yeah.
Better? Right.
Yeah.
It looks like you're trying to boost your volume. I'll just do it for you automatically.
Yeah. It's a collector's item, says Web0213 in our chat room.
A collector's item.
That's a collector's
item. Like the first Zune or...
Yeah. You'll be glad you have it when the Smithsonian comes to call.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm jealous. I admit it.
I'm more curious about the future for this thing because I want to see if anyone comes up with some interesting use cases for it that outweigh the negatives. And that's something I'll be looking at the reviews to see what happens there. And from the users, too, the people actually buy it.
And it may not.
Yeah, so we have 2 weeks, right? 2 weeks to use it in your regular workflow. I'm going to put the Google Fi SIM in it, and I'm going to use it a lot. I mean, see how it works into my workflow or doesn't work into my workflow.
So the problem is you can't go to bars and take pictures of drinks, so you'll never know how terrible the camera
is. I know.
Yeah, that's true.
I'll go on my roof deck, though, and do that.
Yeah. No, this could be the perfect untapped phone. I just want to see you.
I doubt it.
I just want to see you typing on it like it's a little laptop on your lap.
I know. Doing so your everybody's notes. Already saying, is it lappable?
Of course,
so
it's lappable.
My guess is no.
It's kneeable.
But you know what I will say? I've had this problem with many Surface devices. I always feel like they're weighted wrong, like too heavy in the top, not heavy enough in the bottom.
Right.
This feels really well weighted, and that's a good surprise.
It should be 50-50, right?
I mean, it should be two identical parts, right? Same batteries, same. I mean, I guess one side has
a bigger battery than the other side. And the mother.
But also, the hinge is very tight, right? So it doesn't. Like, I felt like one of the Surface Books, I forget which model, it kept tipping over for me. Like, when I'd put it on my lap, it would just, like, fall off, you know?
Yeah. Those are top heavy. Yeah, for sure.
Yeah. Yeah.
I think they're different. I remember seeing the X-ray of it, the clear one. And I think the batteries were different.
Inside.
Battery sizes are different.
That's interesting. Okay.
Huh. Well, there's more, you know, there's different circuitry in each side. So it could easily be that they're asymmetric in weight. But I think it would be smart to kind of try to balance
it. Yeah, do something to make them as balanced as possible.
Yeah.
It'll be like pennies in one side.
Yeah. Oh, I'm so
I want to check the battery life, obviously, like in a real world usage, make sure.
Yeah, that's
actually good.
Those are the two big question marks, battery life and camera, I think.
Yep.
Right.
Yep. Right.
The two unknowns. And then actually the third thing I'd be very interested in is how well Microsoft's Android adaptations work to split. To use, you know, if you open two apps, it goes to two different screens. Or
Well, in a way, it's right. I don't know if there's anything truly unique in it that Microsoft did as far as that goes, but I guess.
Well, I know that Android has some support for dual screens. That's been built in since Android 10, but I don't know exactly what. And they implied that they had done some extra stuff to be sensitive to the form factor.
They did. Right. They showed their own Office apps, right, as being more customized for the dual screen.
Is there a version of Notepad for that?
No.
Oh. Bummer.
I know.
Bummer, man.
I was going to ask Paul, you know, if he could.
Yeah, I would have made a Xamarin version of my app if Xamarin wasn't so terrible.
Flutter. Yeah. Flutter it, Paul.
Yeah. I know.
Yeah.
I tried. It's not very good.
Oh, that's too bad. So, and then you also got a note.
I don't know what I'm going to use. Suggestions in place of Notepad? Like, what should I use?
Oh, yeah, there's some good Android choices for Note. I mean,
just use OneNote, you know,
for Microsoft Word.
I don't think you like OneNote.
Well, I mean, the mobile Word is
too much.
Or the Office app, you know. It's just.
The Office. That's a good call. Yeah, because that's very simple.
Mobile Word and Mobile Office are not. You know, gigantic apps. I mean,
That's true.
That might not be a bad choice.
I'm trying to think what I use. I mean, I like Google Keep, but that's really for note taking, not for writing. You want a writing app.
Yeah.
Well, plus it's a Microsoft thing. I mean, I think sticking with the Office stuff.
Well, that makes sense.
That's a good call. Because I use Office.com on my Pixel all the time.
Interesting. Really,
so I use those apps there. Yep.
You don't use the Android app?
Yeah, I do. I use the Android app, but
Android app. Okay.
I call it office.com. I know that's not the right
Right. Name. But the standalone Office app has all three
parts
built in.
Yeah, because it has a lightweight version of PowerPoint, Word, and Excel. I don't really use Excel, but I use it to like sign documents electronically, you know, and all that kind of stuff. So, yeah, that's what I should use on here, right?
Yeah, I think so.
It'll be good. Yeah.
Yeah, plus that will give you a good test because they will have tailored that app to work properly.
Right.
Yeah. Now, I noticed you didn't put the bumper on it.
Not yet.
Do you think that you'll need the bumper? I had a theory why the bumper. Oh, yeah. I had a theory that it was to prevent you from slamming it shut and cracking the screens. I don't know.
I think it's also so it doesn't slide on a table, right? It gives it a grippy thing, and it's also
It's kind of very slippery.
Is it? It's slippery. Okay.
Yeah.
So you don't feel the need to put the bumper on?
No, I'm going to put it on for sure.
Yeah.
I drop my phone all the time. Like I'm always dropping my phone.
That's what I'm worried about with this Note thing. Like they didn't send a case. I always buy a case, even if I think I'm going to return it, because I don't want to, you know, damage the phone. And I'm really nervous about damaging this.
I love it. Going to damage that. The cheap phones, like this Motorola Edge, come with cases in the box.
Yeah.
And then the really expensive
does the same thing.
Yeah, I mean, this is a case. I mean, it's not it's a nice, beautiful case, but it protects
like a clear
it.
Case, basically.
Yeah, it's a clear plastic sheath.
Yeah.
It's nice. It comes in the box. It's like, it's nice. It's like, thank you.
It is nice.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Thank you.
So there's a picture of the battery. Chris Wolfel on Twitter just tweeted to me and Paul, here's the battery sizes on the two sides.
And are
so
they
one side, the battery is much bigger than the other side.
So they must do something. Where, oh, geez. It's not even close. Okay. No. So it's.
But see, all the other guts stuff is on the side with the small battery.
So they, I mean, obviously, they have to do something to make
they
those
thought
as
about
close.
It. They thought about
it.
Yeah.
They have to.
For sure. For sure. Oh, I'm so jealous.
I'm really looking forward to trying it. I was like kind of, I've been skeptical about the claim about it's more better productivity because of the hinge and two screens side by side. I want to try that and see if I feel like that is actually.
I can't wait for you to turn into a hinge zombie. You're going to be like,
I don't think that's cool, but.
I'm a hinge zombie.
I'm so creative now.
I'm a hinge zombie.
I feel so much more creative.
I look at it and I just start writing fan fiction.
I'm interested in that. I'm just interested in seeing it because when I saw the price tag for this, I was like, wow, $1,400 to start, right? I'm like, that's almost the price of my Surface Laptop 3, right? I'm like, it's expensive.
Oh, man. All right. Very exciting. Christmas Day comes early. But this is also the bad time of year where we get so many phones. And it's gonna be a little crazy for the next couple of months. Now, Paul, are you not getting? I didn't want to hurt your feelings, but are you not getting one?
Well, we get one. So Brad got the.
I see. Petri,
the same publication.
Got it.
They're gonna give it to the guy that's probably gonna be a little kinder to it.
Oh,
let's put it that way.
Have you earned that reputation?
I'm a little too truthy, maybe. Truthy. For Microsoft. Ooh.
That's why I was surprised I got one, to be honest. Right.
What's that?
I was surprised I got one because of that. I'm always complaining about like the battery life, you know, it's not lappable. And they're probably like, oh, never give her any more devices. She's always complaining.
I think you're an ideal person to review something like this. And
I do too.
I said that before with, you know, the Surface laptops and things like you don't. There's a real problem in the reviewer world where someone who has reviewed a lot of devices and is generally much younger than we are, will look at this thing and give it like an instant rating. And because of their incredible experience, they know exactly what they're talking about. And you'll look at it and actually use it. And you'll use it over time. You know, and your opinion on this thing is much more valuable, I think, than a typical reviewer, including in some ways myself, I guess. I mean, although I don't toss off reviews after 3 days like a lot of people.
No,
but,
you don't.
You call it a real world review, and that's exactly what it is.
I also feel like if they're aiming this at quote normal people who are productivity users, I'm like right in their wheelhouse. Right? That's me.
You're
practically a first line worker.
To make the Surface go.
I am.
Yeah,
you tried to make that work, and maybe this is a better take on the same kind of a thing. Something you could throw in your purse or whatever, carry with you, and if something happens, you can use it to get something done.
Yeah, that's what I want to try. Like, if I really need to, like, fix something in the CMS or do something where I have to be out and have it.
That will definitely work.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah, you might even get to the point where you're like, what if I throw a little Bluetooth keyboard in there too? And
I know,
you know, maybe you can write
that.
Oh, I don't know.
Everybody's like, "Is it? Could you ever use this as a laptop replacement?" I'm like, "Well, not with without a bunch of peripherals, no."
Yeah.
You
know?
Yeah. Then you get it right. You get into the goofy thing where you have to have a little stand, you know, or something to hold, you know, because you want it in one direction.
Right? Yeah. Then you're like bringing a webcam and you're bringing a ring with the light. And then you need a suitcase instead of a purse. And then,
just a matter of time.
It is.
Like, why don't you just bring a laptop?
Yep.
Yeah, no, I'm curious. Yeah. I'm curious.
That's all I can tell you about it today.
Right.
But in a couple more weeks, I can tell you more.
So the 10th, which is when it starts coming to people, normal people like me. And you'll be able to talk about it then. Huh?
Right. So they said there are 50 people got these. It says inside the box. Said you're among the first 50 people who got the external review unit. Nice. So I assume there'll be 50 reviews posting on September 10th.
Sure.
Probably a lot of YouTube reviews.
The only smart thing they've done is they've made a lot of those guys wait a lot longer than they would have. Because you would have seen the reviews coming out within a couple of days.
So, like 1 minute after they got the device. Yep. Like, hands on.
Yep. I have given you my opinion from on high, and now I am moving on to the next device. You know,
that's
like,
true.
Well, hold on a second. You know, so maybe that was smart on their part. And that might even, I mean, I'm reaching here a little bit, but it might show that Microsoft feels like this thing deserves a little bit more of a chance. Yeah. And that if people would actually use the damn thing, you know, maybe they'll find a use for it.
No, I hate when we see that, right? Like, you see somebody takes it off, like, the show floor, and they use it for 1 minute, and then you see hands-on review. I'm like, wait a minute, what?
Yeah. I think some companies now are saying you can't call it that.
Yeah, that's good.
Well,
It's just too.
I'm calling it a pause on review because Sriracha already had his pause on.
What does Sriracha think?
He was like all over it. The minute it came out of the box, he was like laying on it, looking at it, touching it. I was like,
interesting. Oh, how interesting.
Could you make it into a little tent so I can put my head inside it?
Exactly. Could you put a cat video on there so I could try tent mode?
That's cute. Well, it's Sriracha approved then, yes?
It is already.
Nice.
I know.
Nice. Really good. All right, let's take a little break. There's still much more to talk about, as you might imagine. Paul Thurrott, Mary Jo Foley, we're talking all about Microsoft Windows and that new Surface Duo. You know, one of the things you'll probably be able to do right away on that is sign documents with Adobe Sign. Don't you hate when you get in? I get still all the time in emails. Print this, sign it, scan it, or fax it to us. It's like, come on. That is ridiculous. First of all, the absolutely antiquated notion that somehow using pen and ink to sign something is a way to prove identity is nuts. Adobe Sign, signers love it, and you will love it. If you're running a business with everything going on right now, you might be facing some challenges. We know no matter what's happening, your business needs to keep moving. And that's where Adobe Sign can really help. Adobe Sign has processed now more than 8 billion transactions from millions of signers around the globe, small startups to giant global organizations. Its e-signatures are just the 21st century. They improve efficiencies across all departments for that vitally important work to get done, whether it's permit requests or construction planning or health services, internal operations too, you know, human resources, procurement, IT. Everybody will thank you for using Adobe Sign. And because it's employee-driven and completely automatic, you can have self-serve workflows, which make it easy for your employees to initiate and track signing processes. Unlike paper signatures, you can enforce deadlines. You say, hey, you didn't sign it by Friday. It's no good anymore. It will automatically archive your final documents, complete with audit trails. Another way, it's more secure than paper signatures. You save time and you save money. Adobe Sign is as secure and as you need it to be. Enterprise-grade security and compliance, HIPAA compliant for healthcare, FERPA for financial industries, GLBA, and more. It can be configured in the ways, your requirements demand. Things like you can have verification with the government IDs, certificate-based employee IDs like PIV or CAC cards. E-signature is just, it seems to me the best way to go. It's both legal and accessible. I think that's really important. And Adobe Sign, because they've been doing this so long and they're so good at this, they will automatically enforce regulatory and policy rules. So you know you're going to have a completely legal e-signature. It already works with everything you're using, Microsoft 365, Salesforce, ServiceNow, Workday. They also have a fantastic API, so you can incorporate it into everything you do. And again, I just want to say it again, as a signer, I love it. You just click a link, sign, you can track and manage the progress so you know the status of every signature. And if somebody's still waiting, you can send reminders, you can cancel requests, contracts get signed, loans get approved, deals get done faster than ever before. Adobe Sign has solutions for every kind of company, from the smallest businesses to global companies. Keep your business moving with Adobe. Learn more about what Adobe Sign can do for your business at adobe.com/businessmoves. That's A-D-O-B-E, adobe.com/businessmoves. You know why? Because business moves with Adobe. Adobe Sign. Thank you for supporting Windows Weekly. All right. We're over our duo FOMO. Yes. I have it.
There's not that much FOMO yet, right? Because we can't really do anything.
I love it that you can't turn it on. It makes me feel a little bit better anyway. But I have it. I've got duo FOMO, that's for sure. There is a new Microsoft Android launcher. Do you think this is for the duo or is just...
So, Paul, did you get this new launcher? I got it on my phone, on my Pixel 3 XL, right? It's the launcher 6.2, which is the newest version of the Microsoft launcher, right?
I used it.
I've been using it too. It changed my entire screen, which before this hasn't happened. Like it made all my icons really big, so I had to go back in and resize them. And it changed like the look of my clock. It did all these weird things when I installed.
Yeah, so it's a completely different launcher. It's actually a different product.
It is, right?
Like, Yeah. So they had developed this as like a separate preview app in the store, and then they just pushed the 5X series to 6.0 and you got the new one. So the thing you just complained about, the large icons, everyone's seen that. Everyone's had that problem. Okay. Who's upgraded?
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yep.
I also have been having trouble getting certain apps to recognize my touch gestures since I installed it.
Okay.
And I'm like, I saw you wrote, I was searching for a fix for that. And I saw that you had written something about version 6 of the launcher when it came out, that some people were having problems with certain apps actually recognizing gestures. And I'm like, okay, so now this is suddenly happening too. Yeah.
So I'm not using it anymore. I mean, I used it. I just tried it for a little while.
Oh, you did?
I thought when you first started describing the problem, so there's a weird thing when you have a launcher, like any launcher, not just the Microsoft one, but if you have some sort of a layout in your existing launcher, like the default Google one or whatever, and then you install Microsoft Launcher, it has its own little, they don't like bring the layouts forward. You know what I mean? Like,
I know, they don't.
I thought what you were going to say was that because you went from 5 to 6, it went to a default layout as if it were a completely different product, because in many ways it is. But I guess that's not what happened.
I saw some people complaining about that, saying they had apps that were installed and now they don't see them. Like, where are they? I'm like, oh boy. Okay.
Well, here's the question I have. So when they first started testing this, the theory was this was an early peek at the UI that's going to debut in the Duo, you know, and that they were going to.
This is going to be the, like, I would assume. Right?
The but when you turn the Duo on and you look at it, I think what you're going to find is that it's not the same thing at all.
Oh, really?
And
isn't the feed the same? I thought the feed, you know, when you use the launcher, you have a feed, Microsoft's feed, and I thought the feed was the same.
You think the feed is the same? Okay, it could be.
The Duo.
And, I mean, I just, I look at the Duo launcher. Shots that I've seen, it doesn't look anything like the Microsoft launcher to me, but I could be completely wrong. I don't know.
So I don't know yet. Like, people are saying to me, well, which version of the launcher is on the Duo? I don't know because I haven't turned it on yet.
But. Yeah. And if you did turn it on, you couldn't tell them.
I couldn't say. 2 weeks. I know. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yep. No, I was just curious if you were hearing about people. I think it's mostly when I'm using the built-in messaging app in Android that sometimes it's just like not registering my keystrokes.
That's not good.
It's weird. And it only happened after I got the new launcher. So I'm like, what happened there? I don't know.
Yeah, I'm not sure. I'm sorry.
Okay.
You failed us, Paul.
He knows everything. Any question, my pulse.
It took 600 and whatever episodes, but as it turns out, I don't know everything.
It did take a long time, 687 episodes.
Yeah, it took about 6 minutes of the first episode. Okay.
I was really stunned to see this statistic.
What's that?
25 years ago yesterday. You kind of start me up.
Here's another statistic that I found kind of interesting. This was in a Medium post from a former Microsoft employee. The year that Windows 95 shipped, obviously in 1995, the PC industry sold, I think it was 80 million computers. And then by the time Windows 98 shipped, they were shipping 100 million a year. So that's how small that market was, right?
Yeah.
I mean,
it's much bigger now, right?
100 million of anything. It's a lot. It's a big number. 100 million is a big number, really. Yeah. I mean, realistically speaking, in the lifetime of Windows 95. But, you know, you look at Android devices, they've sold 2 million units in a year.
Yeah.
Right. Some years, I know.
You know, it's interesting because in many ways, Windows 95 is where the computer became sort of a mainstream thing, I guess, for a lot of people. Mm-hmm. But that's how small it was, you know, comparatively speaking.
Yeah.
You know, I remember going to a satellite event in San Francisco. There was a big tent. So there were events all over the country, right?
That's right.
Yeah. I wondered if you were at the main one. You weren't there.
No, I was at the satellite event. No, you guys were probably at the one in Redmond.
I was at the main one. I had just moved to Seattle like a couple of years before that. So it was one of my biggest events when I first moved to Seattle. Yep.
Yeah, we had to, we were working on a Windows 95 book, and we opted not to go because we needed to get.
Oh, really? Wow. Yeah, it was really insane how like star studded and glitzy it was, because you know we were used to going to operating system launches and Visual Studio launches, right? And suddenly you're like in this event where Jay Leno and Jennifer Aniston and there's a Ferris wheel, and I'm like, what is happening right now? Because that's not how most tech events were back then.
What was the deal? Why did Microsoft make this so big?
I think they really thought they were at an inflection point, right? Like
I think this is the product for consumers. Yeah.
Yeah. This would make it every person's operating system for normals, right?
The technical underpinnings of what became Windows 95 had been around for probably 3 years or more. Mm-hmm. The UI was obviously different. Plug and play started happening, right? That was the beginning of that. Although, by the way, the plug and play of Windows 95, it's important to remember that Jeff Rakes predates.
Jeff Rakes is in there.
Ballmer, Gates, dancing really
predates
badly.
Predates USB, right? This is 3 years before USB, or 2 years before USB, whatever.
Yeah. Bill was so young.
I know.
Oh, my God. He was so young. Yeah. We were all so young, I guess.
We were. Sure. We were. Yep. 25 years ago. I know. Yeah.
Yep. And Leno was the host.
He was. Yeah. Yep. No, I remember I got there late because of traffic, right? And I got there and there were no seats left in the big tent. And so I sat in the very last row. I had a press badge. And then somebody from PR saw me and they're like, why are you sitting in the last row? And they brought me up to row 3, and I was way up in the front, and I was like, oh, this is awesome.
You knew you'd made it.
I did.
And there were big rumors about spending millions and millions on the Rolling Stones song. But I think it wasn't as much as we all assumed. This is the tent.
So do you guys remember the song they really wanted?
What did they really want?
Yeah,
they wanted the end of the what is it called?
End of the world as we know it from REM.
Yeah.
REM said no.
Yeah. It's the end of the world. That doesn't start me up. It's much more joyous.
It is.
They lucked out.
Yeah,
start me up has its own problems, but yes, it is. worked. Okay. The ad was great, right? Remember the ad with the song and the little kid at the end.
Yep.
People stayed up till midnight and lines formed outside of stores. It's, you know, it's the type of thing that later, you know, Kristen, more recently, we saw that with Apple product launches and stuff. But, you know, for the PC industry, like that was it, you know, it was, that was the apex. There's no doubt about it.
Communicate with other people. whether it's the Microsoft Network or electronic mail or sharing files. A real theme of the PC is to become a great communications tool, and Windows 95 is a big step in that direction.
I'll have so you can put your cup of coffee in there.
Look at these icons. Oh, man.
Oh, man. A lot of those icons are still in Windows.
So. I know. I was thinking that same thing. I'm like, you know, there are some things that look very similar today.
Yeah, but the screen resolution is so low, everything is ginormous.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, the basic user interface has not changed, right? Start button, start menu, right. Taskbar, desktop.
Yeah.
Brad Silverberg, right?
Brad Chase. Chase.
I'm sorry. I always mix those two up. I'm sorry.
Yeah, Brad Chase.
Yep. Brad. It's you know, and the recycle bin, right? Which you know, Apple shamelessly ripped off. No, just kidding. So just
I remember talking to Steve Jobs right around this time. And he was he wasn't at Apple anymore. He was at Next. And he was pissed.
Sure.
He was so pissed. He said, when we launched Macintosh, we had a 10-year lead on the industry.
Sure.
And we blew it.
Yeah.
And he even thought by the time Windows 3.1.1 came out, I think it was, this was 94, I think, the year before. He thought that was it, that our lead's blown. But you know, honestly, Windows 95 was so good, it did eclipse the Mac quite a bit, I think. In terms of a GUI. I
mean, the Mac was already on the way out by that point. And, you know, Windows 3, I think it was 3.1 probably, but Windows 3X, whatever, somewhere in that time frame, Windows obviously became a huge success. And then I think fixing the UI.
This is Jay Leno.
Now let's welcome the chairman of Microsoft. Listen to this. This is a man so successful, his chauffeur is Ross Perot, ladies and gentlemen. Please welcome Bill Gates and the Bill Gates Dancers.
And this was the really, I mean, I got to stop it every time they play this Stone song because I know we're going to get takedowns.
Oh, yeah. Yep.
But, there's Mary Jo. No, just kidding. But you were there. You were in the third row, right?
Actually,
there.
That guy in the front, I can almost, Fred Anderson. Who was that was the old CFO, I think, of Microsoft. Guy with the white hair.
Bob Herbold.
Maybe. Herbold. A wired Microsoft mouse with a ball at the bottom.
Most of the mouse equipment is kept with the other mice. It's all in the... This is your main mouse area.
Look at Gates' face. He's mad. He's like, why is he making jokes?
You really don't know much about Windows 95. No. I'll show you. See, what I really like is everything you need to do, I can do right from the start button here. You see that? Look at that, Bill, huh? Boom. Right there. We got start. Everything's here under the program menu. See? If you want to add new programs, just pop up.
Are people literally cheering?
I don't know what's in the background. I don't know if I have.
That makes sense.
I must have something else running in the background.
No, you know what?
That's crazy.
I think I remember they brought people who worked on the product to the launch, and they were sitting in the sides, I believe.
Oh, Panos would have loved that.
Yeah. It wasn't just press. It was like people who built the product were there too.
Wow.
So yeah.
You guys. So I'm for some reason, all this trivia is going through my head as I watch this. Like Windows 95, one of the big controversies was that it wasn't really fully 32-bit, right? 16-bit right. kernel, 16-bit boot, 32-bit user space, whatever. Do you remember what they used to call when code had to go between 16 and 32-bit? Worlds or whatever. Do you remember the word they used?
Sharding? No.
Something that's like a good word, though.
That's a database word.
I shard my windows.
Shimming. Is it?
No. That's also good. That is micro. It was thunking.
Thunking. I remember thunking. That. I do remember that.
Yes. Oh, man. Wow. That's better than squirting.
Yes.
But it's in the same ballpark.
There's Brad Silverberg.
Yeah. 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 Another bearded guy.
Yep.
This, I mean, you can see this is, I can't imagine Microsoft doing this for anything today. No. This was a big deal.
It was huge. Yeah, there's the team, right? Is that the team? Yeah.
Oh, that's what all the cheering, they've been behind the screen.
I'm like, they're back there, yeah. That was pretty cool.
That was really cool. So, for those who aren't watching the video, they're on a stage. They're in a big tent, but it looks like they're in an auditorium. And all of a sudden, the backdrop falls, and there's a whole section of bleachers with hundreds of Microsofties cheering. It's pretty cool. It's pretty cool.
Color-coded shirts.
All I remember is I was like, oh, can I run back there and start interviewing some of those people? And they're like, ah, you're not going back there.
Yeah, those are the people you want to talk to.
Yep.
Pinball game. Pinball. Came with a pinball game, right?
Yep.
That was in Plus.
The Plus pack, yeah.
He just never does it. Pizza. You know, and he wrote it by hand on paper.
No, this is, I do have some other audio in there. Never mind.
So like anybody
Steve,
who wants
Steve
to
Jobs
see...
is talking in the background, yeah. So that's definitely not.
Anybody who wants to see old memorabilia around Windows 95, like diskettes that people used to install, and even like Windows 95 branded beer and stuff, betacollector.com. That's our friend Stephen Chapman's site.
There's the Friends, cast.
Yeah, yep, and they had everybody there. It was so crazy.
I went to an event like this. It was an outdoor event where they streamed the video. Mm-hmm. Right, that was in San Francisco, I think, or the Bay Area somewhere.
Yeah.
Well, what a day. What a day. We'll never forget it. Windows 95.
It was a pretty good
day. On that stage.
It was.
And that was a big, I do think it was a watershed for Windows.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Sure.
I actually enjoyed using it.
I mean, Windows 98 event was nothing. The Windows XP event, which unfortunately happened in the wake of 9/11, was like the saddest thing I've ever been. I mean, the event itself was fine, but the actual launch event stuff, like at night, like you go out, like there was like a Gateway store that had like an actual cow in front of it in New York City.
Oh God!
There's like three people ambling by, and it was like this was a one shot deal. Like they never ever had anything like this again.
Yeah. 25 years ago. Was this Microsoft at its peak?
I'd say it was Windows at its peak, maybe.
Yeah, peak Windows. Yeah.
I mean, it's hard to, you know, but what do you mean by peak? I mean, obviously, Windows
peak of dominance.
Used by
peak
1 billion
peak
people.
Peak of power.
You know?
Yeah, probably.
I would say this, 95 to 98 to 2000, maybe somewhere in there. Definitely. Mm-hmm.
I just
this
remember
is the high point
we had to
marketing.
Do you remember we had to go out and interview people about it, like man on the street kind of thing, right? So we were all going to like CompUSA and Best Buy and interviewing people at midnight the night before the launch. And I remember somebody talked to some guy in the line, and they're like, "Why are you in the line?" He goes, "I don't even know what this is a line for, but there's so many people. I figure it must be something really cool." I'm like, "It's an operating system." He goes, "What's an operating system?"
You guys have both met my wife. So one time I dragged her to an Apple store and stood in line to get a new release of Mac OS X.
Yeah.
And I think it was Tiger or something. There's a line of people outside of the store. So she starts walking around. She goes, "Why are you here?" And the guy in front of me is like, "Well, you know, we're getting a new release." And she's like, "Right. But do you need it tonight or could you get it tomorrow? Is this going to solve a problem that needs to be solved today, or could you just wait a day? Like, why would you wait in line for this?" And he's like, I didn't know.
It just seemed like the thing to do at the time.
Yeah.
So this says Chicago setup. So this is the beta version. That was the code name, right? Chicago.
Chicago. Yep.
That's right. And originally it was going to be Windows 4.0. That's an early beta. That's a really
93, it says. Yeah, August
93. I got involved with this in October 1994. And at that time, it was Windows 4.
Do you think they named Bing after Chandler?
No.
Okay.
That was good, though.
just a sudden realization.
Just asking.
Yep. Yeah. Just asking for a friend.
Yeah.
They were going to go with Joey, but it was already taken.
Windows Joey.
Exactly. Yeah, the other thing that launched on that same day was Internet Explorer 1.0. That was part of the launch.
That's
unbelievable. MSN launched in that system. Yep. Plus, obviously, Office 95. Yep. That was an amazing year for Microsoft.
Just imagine coordinating that. Like when you see how things are so hard to coordinate now.
Mm-hmm.
Like think about everybody had to be done ready to launch together.
Well, it's right? basically pre-internet too. I mean, obviously there was an internet, but it wasn't like today. I mean, it was all dial-up. You know, the Windows 95 beta was all, you know, like today you do. Today everyone says public, but it eventually went to public news groups. At that time, it was CompuServe, and CompuServe was very expensive. So there was no nonsense in the beta group. You kind of went in, you did your thing, and you got out. Like, there wasn't a bunch of like, well, I think that, you know, it's like more important. You know, there was none of that. It was
you didn't
just
have time.
It was all business. You couldn't afford it. You couldn't afford to be an idiot. Now being an idiot
now
is free.
It's cheap. Everybody can afford it.
Everyone can be an idiot now. It's great. Yeah.
Thank God for the internet. For example. Yeah.
25 years ago. What an amazing ride it's been since then.
Yeah. I mean, the next year NT4 came out, and that had that was NT with the Windows 95 UI. That was very exciting, at least for me. Windows 2000.
Was that the launch in the parking lot?
Brought it together.
Was that NT4? What was the launch in the parking lot? NT4 or NT5? Do you remember that? It was the antithesis of the Windows 95 launch, right? It was like held in a Microsoft parking lot.
Yeah. No, I didn't go to anything like that. The night that Windows NT became public, I was at a work party for my wife, and somebody threw me into the pool. So I showed up at Software, et cetera, at midnight, and I was soaking wet from head to toe. And I walked through the street, and I made that squishy sound. Every step was like squeak, squeak,
squeak, squeak. You were a young man.
Yeah. This guy was like, "What are you doing?" And I'm like, I'm gonna spend $150. Relax.
I'm here to buy Windows 95. The look, I mean, it's not exactly fluent design.
No.
Well, but it's, it was a little more consistent, right? Windows 3.1
had functional. It was very functional. I liked it.
Yeah. They got rid of all those the manager programs. Remember program manager, file manager, printer manager. I don't remember all of them. Well, device manager is still around today.
That's because at the time you were running DOS with ProgMan on top of it, really. Yeah, right? Yeah. I don't know about but did 95, did they get rid of DOS in 95 or was that later?
No, it was in there.
It was in there. DOS was still there.
For a long time, yeah.
For a while, they were going to sell a DOS 7. They decided not to, just to kind of push
the whole. Yeah, that's right. Oh, man, that's right. I totally forgot that. Yep.
Yeah, you could boot Windows 95 to DOS if you wanted to.
Wow. So you really...
I remember thinking, okay, this is something I can actually use and figure out.
Yeah. Yeah, no, technically, both Windows 95 and the Mac had issues for sure. Mac had more issues. And I feel like this one, they actually exceeded the Mac UI for the first time. And, they got a nice little, Apple had some issues for sure. I mean, they kind of sat on that code base for a long time.
Windows 95.
I remember.
Did it fit on one CD or was it a bunch of CDs?
Oh, yeah.
Fit on one CD.
But when people were installing the betas, do you remember people installing them from diskettes? Like tons of diskettes, right?
That was the worst.
I never experienced that. Like we were always on CD. In fact, that was the story I told in the newsletter this week because that October, Gary, the guy I was working with, had handed me the CD and he said, go install this and we'll talk. And I was like, I don't have a CD drive on my computer. and he said, well, you're going to have to get one.
Here's remember this, the Weezer song that came with it?
Yep.
Yeah, so these videos are possibly 160 by 120 resolution.
Really low quality.
They're tiny.
Yeah.
And there's a, there's the skiing video is also on there.
Uh-huh.
I think, I want to say an Alanis Morissette video. Does that sound right? Huh. And some other song on there.
There's the plus pack.
Yeah.
Yep.
Oh, I love what is that thing. Bar? What is that ugly bar?
Channel bar. So this is Windows 98. This is plus 90. This isn't even the right plus, but this is Windows 98 and the internet, the channel bar.
Oh, so IE4. This isn't even 95?
No, this is not if you have the channel bar over there.
Oh, liars. Can't trust YouTube.
They did one for 95 and then one for 98.
You just can't trust YouTube. It says 95 on the desktop, on the wallpaper.
Oh, so it does. Oh, maybe they added IE4, so they just installed it later. They could have added IE4 to Windows.
It was the 95. Internet Jumpstart Kit.
Yeah, but that's from literally 3 years later. Like, it's not, that's not from 1995.
Okay. And there's Mark Andreessen. About 12 years
looking
old.
Looking very angry.
Yeah, he wasn't happy about IE. This is just some random YouTube video that's like a trip down memory lane with Windows 95. Yeah. Well, those were the days, my friends.
Yep. Genie. Was there it's called Delphi that was?
Yeah, Delphi. Yep, yep. I was on all of them.
Well.
Oh, I used all of them.
Genie was that like a GE thing? It must have been. Is that why it had the name Genie? I don't know.
No one knows.
I don't know. I bought a PS on Sears.
Yeah.
That came with some online service that might have been Delphi. I don't remember.
Yeah.
It was some It had like four shades of gray, so it was really hard to see everything.
That's funny.
Yeah.
That's really funny. All right. I'm sorry. I kind of got a little caught up.
No, it's fun. It's fun thinking back. And you know what? It feels so long ago, but then in some ways it doesn't, right?
Yeah. Actually, I still have. These are always out, but this is a – I can't read it. It's a beta. Yeah. So this is actually – no, this is it. So this is the first Windows 95 disk that I got. This is literally it.
Oh, wow.
Beta 2. Nice. And then I also have, this is the final release, but this is the final release of Office 95. And this thing installs, I'd have to try it to be sure, but it's the product key is either whatever number of ones, just all ones, or all ones with a two at the end. And that will,
I remember that. It was all ones. Yeah.
Yeah.
I remember that. That was so dopey. Yeah. Wow. So, I mean, I'll
hold on. Some of the few things I hold on to. From that time, but yeah.
And there's you are still up on Thrott.com your file not found. Your 404. No, this is your 5 years ago, your 20th anniversary.
Yeah, I did a write up. Yeah, okay. 5 years ago.
Yeah. Not, I mean, I guess that would, you could just reuse that.
I mean, last summer I installed Windows 95 in a VM along with a bunch of operating systems.
What?
Well, it's my history of Windows thing that I was writing, and
how did that work?
You know, it's interesting. It's interesting going back through all that stuff.
Did it run really fast?
Yeah.
It was super fast.
It was. Yeah.
We've never been in such a fast environment
before. Everyone bought like new computers that year, basically, right? Mm-hmm. Because you wanted to get it was probably 46 at the time, DX with, you know, 4 megabytes or maybe 8 megabytes of RAM if you were really rich or something. The CD-ROM.
Right.
CD-ROM was it. There's no writing of CDs, let alone DVDs, or at least not computers.
Were you testing OS 2 at the same time as you were testing Windows 95?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Yes.
I know. I was too.
And I had come off of like the Amiga, and I hated Microsoft. I didn't want to use Windows. And so I was just seeing what else was around. And I really liked OS 2, but I could tell really quickly, like this thing at the time, this is before 95 ship, was obviously better than Windows, and ran Windows apps, 3.1 apps. It was great, and I could tell it was going to fail. All the Amiga guys were like, "Oh, we're going to go OS 2," you know, because they wanted something that was technologically superior. And I was like, "Oh, you guys are all just making the same mistake again."
It was real multitasking and everything, right?
Yeah, it was great, but it was never going to succeed. You could just tell.
I remember Microsoft. When finally they stopped being secretive about Windows 95 betas and they started giving me betas to try when it was closer to launch, IBM started giving me test builds of OS 2. And so they knew my stepdaughter was trying them with me because she was in middle school. And I'd say, what do you think of this? And we'd try it at night together. And then they'd start sending little post-it notes on it. What does Elsa think of this?
Oh, no.
And I'm like, Elsa, you're reviewing this with me now. And so when it came to her school, her Seattle Public School, Elsa knew how to use Windows 95, like right out of the gate. And all the teachers are like, how do you know how to use this? Do your parents work at Microsoft? And she's like, no.
Everybody's parents do.
That year, I worked at a community college. And one of the things people kind of forget is with regards to Windows, Windows 95 was the one where you could right-click. And that was a thing. It became a context menu. But right-clicking didn't debut in Windows 95. It actually debuted in the previous version of Office. So if you had Windows 3.1 in Office, I think it was Office 6, probably it was Word 6. And the other apps had different version numbers, like Excel was might have been 5 or something. But whatever version of Office that was, Office 6, let's call it, that was where Microsoft first implemented right-clicking with context menus. So I ran this computer lab, and I didn't know how to use any of these applications. And people, some student would raise their hand. I'd come over, and they'd be like, what's wrong? I'm like, I don't know how to do whatever this is. And I'd say, did you right-click it? And they're like, they're like, right-click it. And I'm like, yeah, hit the other mouse button. And they're like, oh, look at that. And it was like, it was always the answer. It was always the answer.
Like, it was no just matter so what foreign they at that time, do. Right?
Yeah. It was, no one knew it. No one, they thought it was like the greatest trick in the world. And I was like, I just literally didn't know how to use the applications. You know?
That's awesome.
I remember about that time on the radio, that was the thing. Right click everything.
Yep.
Right click everything.
This is really pulling something out of my butt a little bit. But Windows 95 is also famous for supposedly introducing the registry. That's actually not true. The registry was in, I don't remember where it started exactly, but WordPerfect was one of the first, and they were owned by probably, who owned WordPerfect?
Before Corel. Wasn't it just the Novell. WordPerfect? Oh, Novell owned them. That's right.
Yeah, Novell owned them at the time. And they actually implemented settings for WordPerfect for Windows in the registry, which was something no one had ever heard of. And I remember spending like an almost tear-inducing phone call for hours on the phone with Novell support, trying to figure out getting WordPerfect to run properly over the network. And they're talking about editing the registry. And I'm like, what the hell are you talking about? Like, what is this thing? And I was, they're like, oh yeah, this is going to be like, this is, everything's going to use it soon. You know, like they were on the leading edge. And I'm like, you guys.
Yeah. And you knew then. You knew then, that's how Paul. I knew. Yeah.
The registry is going to be terrible.
Oh God. It's still there. Never stopped.
Yep.
Oh yeah.
Yep. Nope. Yep.
Never-ending registry.
Well, because before that, remember, it was all INI files. That was what they were moving away from. Yeah. That's what it was. And INI files stuck around for a while.
In hindsight, text-based, editable text-based files doesn't seem like such a bad idea.
Yeah, they should have stuck with it. I think they were trying to, I guess, improve performance or something, because text files, you know, they're notoriously humongous. I don't know what text is like the simplest thing in the world. Why would you ever switch off of that? But
yeah. Well, you know what? Linux did the same thing. Everything was configured in text files, and then they went to systemd, and it suddenly it's a, you know, these binary files that are, you know, you can't read. They're fragile. It's not a good thing. I guess it's just there must be some computer science reason for that.
Because text files aren't sophisticated. I'm sure these people, you know, there's always these.
It's not fancy.
We're going to build it like this is a self-healing file type that we invented, you know? It's like, okay.
Yeah. All right, let's take a break. Then we're going to come up to the present.
Yes.
Because believe it or not, kids, 25 years later, Microsoft still makes something called Windows.
Still dealing with those problems.
We'll talk more about Windows 2004 coming up next. Our show today brought to you by ExpressVPN. When I go online, man, that's the first thing I do. In fact, I just leave it on. ExpressVPN protects me. Security? Yes. Privacy? Yes. And one of the things I love about ExpressVPN these days, having run through my entire Netflix library, is it also gives you the internet as if you're in a different country. ExpressVPN is in almost 100 countries. Global. That means everywhere you want to be. And normally when you use ExpressVPN, you press the button, and it uses its smart tool to find the fastest, nearest VPN server. You connect to that for performance. But sometimes you want to see, you say, you know what? I want to watch some Doctor Who. You end up emerging onto the internet in London. You look like you're a British user. You got Netflix fired up, Netflix UK. There's everything you want. Or Tokyo. So you can watch all the anime. Did you know that Netflix UK also has Star Trek Discovery? and Blackadder, one of my faves. Love it. Rick and Morty on Netflix France. You ain't seen nothing till you see Rick and Morty en français. And it's completely legal. If you subscribe to Netflix, you just have it open, you refresh it, and suddenly you're seeing all that extra content. It works with Amazon Prime, BBC's iPlayer, YouTube, and many more. It's so easy to use. ExpressVPN. Change your location, change your life. Hit connect, refresh the page. The show or movie you want to watch will be there. It also protects your privacy, of course, so nobody can snoop on your traffic as it goes through the Wi-Fi. And I mean nobody, not even, and this is the big one, I think, your internet service provider who is legally allowed to snoop on you and sell your information to marketers, and most of them do. With ExpressVPN, they can't see a thing. And ExpressVPN is completely privacy-focused. Their trusted server technology, they're private. You can read their privacy statement and trust it. It's been independently audited and verified. It's what you need. ExpressVPN, the only VPN I use. Go to expressvpn.com/windows. You get the best deal. An extra 3 months when you buy a one-year package. Brings it down to less than $7 a month. That's a good price for the best. ExpressVPN.com/windows. I kind of lied.
You just mentioned Blackadder, the TV show.
Yeah. Isn't that a great
Black
show?
Blackadder, as in there are apes in the Andes that have figured this out, Baldrick. That Blackadder.
Yes, that Blackadder. Obviously a fad.
Yeah.
Mr. Bean.
Yeah. Also excellent.
He is so funny. You know, if you're born looking like that, I guess you have to go into comedy.
Yeah, you go into comedy. You're going to be made of fun of anyways.
What are you, you might as well live it up. Rowan Atkinson. Rowan Atkinson. I was trying to remember his name. So, I have to explain this all the time on the radio show. Let me see if I can get this right.
Yep.
Windows 7 is at end of life.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
So you're on Windows 10. Good news. But even faster than Windows 7 end of life, which took 10 years, Windows 10 1803 is end of life after 2 years. Is that right?
Yep. It would have been. That would have been right.
Yeah. Now, what does that mean? Does it mean the same thing as what? I mean, I don't.
It's confusing. So technically, let's use Windows 10 version 1803 as an example. That is a version of Windows, just like Windows 7 was. Microsoft, you know, will say it's a version of Windows 10, and these things are all kind of the same. And, you know, they're force upgrading us on a very aggressive schedule. So, yeah, technically speaking, Windows 10 1803 should have been exiting support. I don't know when in the next.
I think it should have already have, right?
Would have been 2 years later, right? 2003. Like this would be it.
Actually, the support life cycles have varied over time because Microsoft has addressed feedback, and they also vary depending on what if you have a software assurance license, you can have a longer term support for some releases, and they've formalized that process a little bit more. But the truth is, you know, as we went into Windows 10, I reference this a lot. When that January 2015, Terry Myerson was talking about Windows as a service, and it was like, well, what's the support lifecycle look like? And of course, we've had the weirdness of Intel and Microsoft having that problem with Skylake, and Microsoft declining to support different versions of Intel Silicon and different versions of Windows 10, and so. There's all this different stuff that kind of goes into this. It's very complicated. So when someone calls you on the radio and says, is this support? It's like, it's almost impossible to give an accurate answer in some ways because there are all these factors, and those factors change over time. It's not like the old days. I mean, look, 10 years, whatever, but at least it was clear. You know, if you bought a license for Windows 7 or a PC that had Windows 7 on it, that thing was going to be supported for 10 years. Period. Easy. Now it's, I don't know, it's very vague.
It also depends. Are you running enterprise, education, home, pro? Like even that even varies, right? Because some of them are supported longer than other versions.
Yep.
So yeah.
Yeah, there'll be so, a computer that has, I'm sorry, go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, so 1803 was supposed to be out of support November 10th, 2020. But now the Education and Enterprise editions are going to be supported until May 11th, 2021 because of COVID. That's the stated reason, yep. Right?
Yep.
So I was talking to Rich Woods from Neowen about this today on Skype, and I'm like, so wait, who's still running 1803?
Right.
At this point?
Good question.
But I guess enterprise and education must be.
Yeah, it wouldn't surprise me to discover, especially in the education market, that they've just left it sitting on whatever version. I could picture that. Mm-hmm. But, you know, this is the Windows 10 thing is going to have to cause some reshuffling because, you know, the old 10-year thing, which everyone was so used to, is just not the case anymore. And, unfortunately, you're going to have to upgrade at some point.
There are also people, I mean, I know you're not supposed to be able to defer it. So in theory, if you have Windows 10, you should have a more recent version. But there are people who defer it by saying they're on a metered internet connection.
Yep. That's it. There's all these little tricks, exactly.
And I talk to people on the radio show because, see, I get the edge cases. I get the normals. And very frequently somebody said, well, Windows Update hasn't worked for me since 2017. And,
No, they don't know because they're on someone put them on a metered network, maybe.
Or it got broken. Yep. It's not unusual for Windows Update to get stalled and then subsequent updates don't come in. Mm-hmm. And I've seen that. Haven't you seen that happen?
This is tricky, too, because there's different kinds of updates, right? And so let's say for some reason you wanted to stick on 1803, fine. You still want to get security updates, don't you? I mean, even if you're delaying them 30 or 60 days or whatever you can do, you still want this.
Right.
You want the security updates, obviously.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's Microsoft obvious to you and me.
Right. That's fair enough. But, the big thing for me, and I don't mean to say I predicted this, but I questioned it when they first announced this because, you know, the argument at the time when Windows 10 was first coming out was, well, look, you know, we're supporting Windows Vista, we get Windows 7, we've got Windows 8 and 8.1, and like now we're just going to have one version of Windows. But no, you have a new version of Windows every year.
It is, isn't it?
Now you're supporting more versions of Windows, you know?
Yeah.
So the past 2 years, they've shored that up a little bit. You know, 1903 and 1909 are on the same servicing stack, which is smart. 2004 and 20H2 will be on the same servicing stack, the same plan. Mm-hmm. So now, okay, but you're still doing one a year. You know, one a year is three times as fast as it used to be, you know. Mm-hmm. So you still, it's still a lot of, from Microsoft's perspective, it's a lot to support. Yeah.
I know. But, you know, remember when they were only doing a Windows release every 3 years, you and I and many people were like, you know, it would be better to have more Windows releases than one every 3 years, right? We were all pretty much in favor of more. I don't think knew that meant twice a year, but.
Yeah, right. It's like, okay, we'll give you what you want. You happy now?
Yeah.
Well, maybe there's a happy middle ground.
I know. Yeah.
So I don't know what to say to that. I mean, I think when I was younger, you're probably right, by the way, but when I was younger and, you know, Windows 95, 98, 2000, you know, we can kind of go through all the different versions. Yeah. I mean, I always wanted more, you know. I think now that we get to Windows 10 and look, we're going to stick on Windows 10. And if you go, you know, if you go back to Windows 10, 1607, whatever the first version was, or I guess 15, technically, would have been 1507, right?
1507, I think. Yep.
And you look at that, you compare it to Windows 10 today, the latest version. I mean, visually, they don't look that different. I mean, there's no major UI paradigm changes or anything. I don't know. Yep. I mean, I right now I'm thinking, you know, why slow it down and let's get things right, you know.
But also, and this is the problem when I talk to people on the radio, they say, well, what's new in 2004?
Yeah, that's a terrible conversation, right?
It is.
So what do I need it
nothing,
for?
I mean, not nothing literally, but I mean, it's not
mostly small things. Yeah.
Like I'm not an iOS fan per se, but I look at what's coming in iOS 14 and I'm like, this is actually pretty exciting. There's some major new stuff going on here. This is really cool. But I look at Android, I'm like, Android to me, like Android 11, whatever it's called, like this. I'm sure there's 1,000 new features. I mean, none of them are all that interesting. And Windows is kind of like that, too. It's like, okay, well, yes, I mean, I guess if WSL is a big deal for you, then you will enjoy 2004. Although, actually, as we have in the notes, you don't even need that anymore. But whatever. But I mean, you know, there's not much. And I don't know. Does a mature operating system like Windows need much?
Right.
I don't know.
I know. We don't want Office to change. Remember, everybody was screaming when they were adding Office features all the time. People are like, wait a minute. I just want Office to stay like it is. And I feel like Windows is kind of like that, too. It's like, unless it's your particular feature that you've been dying for, like, I really want such and such in the settings menu, right? I mean, other than that, it's kind of like, okay.
You know, Windows 10 would be perfect if they would just add Unix line endings in Notepad. Right. Oh, wait, they did. It's perfect.
I don't know.
It's a hard, these are hard conversations. I don't know.
They are.
Support stuff is a mess. And then understanding what's new is becoming a mess. And maybe that we should just kind of transition into this, because I think most people would probably agree, whether they want it or need it or whatever, that the Windows subsystem for Linux 2.0.
Yeah. So this was a surprise. Right. Yeah. So, you know, when people say to me, what's new in 2004 that I really want? I'm like, probably WSL2, because that's a whole rewrite of the Windows subsystem for Linux. Mm-hmm. And until last week, you couldn't get it in anything except 2004. But then Microsoft announced late last week, oh, by the way, we are backporting Windows subsystem for Linux to Windows 10, 1903 and 1909. And you're just going to be able to just get it. Everybody's going to get it.
This begs the question, if this major thing can go back to those previous versions, why do we have these versions? What's the point?
Right.
Why are you releasing anything that is a version upgrade so often? Why even do it?
So, you know, So this is a really interesting point, because remember when I started saying, I'm hearing from the people in Windows engineering that some features are going to start being backported to older versions of Windows. And that's why they don't want to call the fast ring or the dev channel the next release, because it's just a bunch of features that may end up in different versions of Windows and may be in the next version or may get backported to a previous version. And I think this is the first indication that that's what's going to start happening, right? Like,
yeah, the need for versions. Well, actually, it's not, in a way, because when they did switch to the new channels theme, we sort of would talk about the dev channel as if it was 21H1. But they had announced some features probably a couple months ago now, where we sort of had this conversation like, well, I mean, some of the stuff is really minor, like that subtle change to the start menu. I mean, how much testing does it, we have to test this thing for 18 months? I mean, why not just put it into the next version of Windows 10? And then they did, you know, along with a few other small things.
Yeah.
So I think this WSL thing and combined with that is making me wonder if they're not rejiggering the way they schedule. Do things. I'm not sure how to describe this. Yeah. The way they deliver features.
Yeah, me too. And I think I still kind of think that tip I got a few weeks ago saying there might only be one Windows 10 release for a feature update going forward. That might be true. Yeah. Instead, they'll have one Windows 10 feature update per year and one Windows 10X feature update per year. And that's it.
Yep. Yep. And then, I mean, once you are spacing it out that far, it's funny that a year now is that far. But, you know, maybe this backporting becomes less important. And then it's just, I don't know, maybe this, it's a little saner. I don't know. This whole thing, this... I look at this block we have in the notes, and every topic in it is a mess. It's just,
I know.
it's really hard to reconcile what they're doing. You know, it's hard to understand why they do it, how they're doing it, why it's changing. It's always been confusing. I don't know. To me, literally,
it's confusing because they don't tell us, right? That's what the reason is confusing is because we can't get information. You know, I'm not kidding you guys. I ask every week about, are people who aren't on Windows 10 2004 going to just be automatically moved to 20H2 when it comes out, or what's going to happen? Because we're starting to get close to the release of 20H2, and not that many people have the May update.
Isn't that funny?
Did this happen last year?
And they just say, we don't have anything to say.
It did.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yep. This exact thing happened last year. Yep.
Yeah. So I think I would beg Microsoft, if you're listening, Chris Capicella and anyone else, like, all we want is information. I mean, give peace a chance. You know,
back in the day, Microsoft used to have something called a service pack, right? And the service pack is sort of what we think of today as a cumulative update, essentially. It was just a way to install X number of months worth of updates, plus probably some new stuff in one whack and you know, whatever. And it wasn't a complete version upgrade, but it did a bunch of things at once, and it was pretty good. Now, you know, Windows is actually more sophisticated. They do have cumulative updates, and that's nice. But they also tested something for a little while, or used something for a little while. It kind of came and went, but called a feature pack. And a feature pack was like a service pack, but it was, you know, for features. And that kind of, that didn't last. And then they started doing R2 releases, and R2 releases were kind of a optional features you could add after the fact to the previous version of Windows, mostly in the server. But, you know, I feel like they're still just experimenting with, like, you know, and again, I keep going back to this. I'm sorry, but like January 2015, Windows is a service. And it's like, well, hold on a second. How are you going to, what's the support life cycle for this? Yeah, we'll figure it out, you know. It's like, okay, but you have like commercial customers especially that, you know, are going to need to understand this. And I don't feel like it's ever been clear. I don't know.
Yeah.
Maybe it's me. I don't know. I find this it's very confusing.
No, it's hard to, we do this full time and it's hard to remember or keep up with it or explain it. What if you don't even, like, what if you're just a normal user? You're trying to figure out, like, what version am I on? When am I supposed to update? Right.
Why do I need this? Okay, I accept the fact that this thing is coming down the pike. What's it going to do for me? And you're like, I don't know, not much. Then why am I going through this?
Yeah, that's my problem. Yeah. That's the thing I'm trying to explain. Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah.
But nobody knows.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't understand. I don't get it. H2 is ready for commercial validation. What's that mean?
Yeah, Mary Jo, please, dear God, tell us, tell me what that means, because I have no, I've read the post. I have no idea what they're talking
about. So if you're in the release, is it still called release preview channel or not?
Yes.
I forget.
Yeah.
Beta channel and release preview channel, and you're a business user, Microsoft wants you to download and test 20H2 because it's almost ready to roll out, right? So they're saying, we want you to go and make sure it works in your organization, make sure everything is good, your apps work, all your services work.
Why would an organization do that? Like, what would be the advantage?
So a lot of organizations have their own internal rings or equivalent of a ring inside. So they have groups set up to be like the early adopters, the late adopters, you know, like don't make the, you know, business group be the early adopters because they're dealing with your finances, right? But this group over here, they could be testers, right? So for companies that want to do that, get an early jump on it, make sure it's not going to screw things up when it starts rolling out. That's why you would validate this.
You know, I used to test Sonos beta updates. Mm-hmm. And I have a friend who was a huge Sonos fan. And one time he was over at my house and he was looking at the thing and he's like, how come this is different? You know, and I said, I beta test the Sonos stuff. And he goes, why?
Because I'm pull through, baby.
I literally couldn't answer. I'm like, I don't. He goes, you're testing this for this company. What do they do for you?
Yeah. What do you get for it?
Do they give you speakers or something?
No.
And I'm like, no, they don't give me anything.
I just like to use the
latest
thing.
Why would you do this to yourself? Why are you doing this? Like, why would you do it? What are you getting out of it? And I'm like, by the way, that was the day I stopped doing it. I couldn't answer that question.
That's very Boston.
I just did it like as a knee jerk.
Paulie, why are you doing this?
Yeah. No, he knows what I do. And he's like, I don't understand.
I don't get it.
What are you doing? Like, why would you put yourself through this? And I...
What are you stupid? Don't. What are you doing?
If you're a business, you don't want there to be surprises, right? Like that's your worst case scenario. Like you're like, oh, you know what? The 20H2 update, it's just going to be this minor update to 2004. It's going to be fine. And then you start rolling it out and it's not fine. Or the servicing mechanism doesn't work for your company and like not everybody's getting it. You definitely want to try that out.
Or something might not be compatible anymore.
Yeah.
Something. Yeah.
Right. So I guess. You might want to just have a few people validate it. Make sure, and you can say, okay, it works.
Okay. So in other words, the validation is coming from the commercial customers. It's not from Microsoft.
Yes. No.
I read it. I wrote a little post about it. And I'm like, I hope to God no one asks me what this means because I literally have no idea.
A little inside, a little how the sausage is made here on Yes Weekly.
And there was another 20H2 build today, by the way, that and Microsoft 20, put out.
Also a dev build as well.
Also, yeah, the dev channel, Fastering.
Whatever.
Yep. So neither of those had any new features. All they had basically were lots of, well 20H2 had a lot of updates, I believe.
By the way, the 20H2 update was referred to as a cumulative update, which means they're literally already servicing it, which goes to what you said earlier, where it's like you may not understand this thing is done, basically.
It's done.
It is done, basically. Yep. They're literally bug fixing it now.
Yep. Yeah, so there was nothing major to report on either of those at all. But there are two more builds.
Yep. So, Mary Jo, you might have missed this before the show started, but Leo spent a comical few minutes trying to get a disk partitioning thing going on the Mac.
So I'm running Linux now on this baby because I gave up on Windows.
Do it. Yeah, he was going to install Windows.
I wanted to. I tried.
He really wanted to.
Turns out, I didn't realize this, but as of 2004, the system.win file, the one that it was missing, is more than 2 gigabytes.
Okay, so
or 4 gigabytes. So you can't get it. So I had a FAT32 partitioned USB key, and it wouldn't work because it couldn't copy that system.
So you need an NTFS partition for that.
You need two partitions on the key, a FAT32 boot partition, and then an NTFS partition. Because
you know,
and
that
this
is
new with 2004, by the way, which is why I'd never encountered this problem.
This is the USB version of moving from CD to DVD. Like all of a sudden.
Yeah. Yeah.
This thing that was big enough is not big enough, and now we need a different format and a different, you know.
Well, and you know, the problem is all the you know, and I always do this because I never remember, all the guides online don't yet know about that. So they say, well, you get UNet Bootin' or what was the other one? Belina Etcher, and you just do that, and it'll make it, and you do it, and the thing, but it doesn't ever work. And now it's because as of 2004... Just got that.
So for people on Windows, I suspect that the Microsoft tool, whatever it's called, would just work, right? You don't have to worry about the
phone. But I was trying to do this on a Mac so I could install it on this Linux. What I did,
just to be clear, this guy was running Linux and was using a Mac to make a Windows install disk and outraged that this would work.
I was trying. This is a Lenovo T470S. It came with Windows on it. I was going to give you guys the benefit of the doubt and put Windows back on it.
I wanted it to work.
I wanted to. But you know what? Linux is almost like Windows. It's really pretty much the same thing now.
Windows has command line tools for partitioning disks. Don't ever use them. It has a legacy tool called Disk Management, which is a Microsoft Management Console interface that is still available via the quick access menu that appears when you right-click the start button. Let me try to bring it up. I use this tool more than I should, frankly. But it still works great, you know. The problem is it's not in settings. It's like its own standalone thing. And, I mean, the big problem, of course, is that it doesn't support dark mode. I mean, I think we can all agree.
Oh, yeah, clearly. My problem is it's not where I used to go to get it. It's in a new spot.
Yeah, yeah.
Right?
Right.
I like how it looks, I guess. I mean,
this is new. So this is this might come as long in the future as next year, but they're finally bringing it into the modern settings interface. I got to say, it's not as good as the old one. You know, the old one
had
nice
that graphical those bars.
Yes,
you knew exactly what was going on. You know,
I really feel like they need to fix that. If you use, you know, whatever the Mac disk partitioning tool is, it might be called Disk Manager or something.
Disk Utility,
Very similar. So you get a graphical view of the disk. It's nice. Like
it's nice. I like to see the bars.
On a thing, do things to it. It's good. Yeah.
I like to see that.
But they're anyway. You know, this is part of the ongoing effort to
confuse
reduce
the hell out of me.
Oh, yeah, it's reasonable to
modernize Windows.
Types of people that would need this kind of tool. Yes, confuse the hell out of them because there's MMC tools like this. There's control panels when they're trying to bring all that into settings.
So is this a standalone? It's in the controls panel, or is it a standalone app?
It's a standalone app. I believe it's a Microsoft Manager. It's probably a .mmc, so it's probably like disk. If you type in disk manage in Windows, you'll get create and format. Oh, actually, it says it's a control panel. It's not a control panel, but it's a Microsoft Management Console application.
Okay.
Maybe it's a control panel that runs in the MMC. Maybe that's why they call it that. Anyway, it's old school is what it is.
It's part of the management console, which is where the disk manager used to be. Storage manager, or whatever they called it. Yeah.
About 95. So if you're, I don't remember when this debuted exactly, but using Windows NT certainly, and then Windows 2000 on, you could right click the computer icon or whatever it was called in your version of Windows and choose manage probably. And that would bring up the computer management MMC, which had a bunch of MMCs inside of it. One of them was disk management. I don't remember all of them, but there were others like the reliability thing was in there and some other stuff.
Cool.
It's still there. Maybe it's still there.
And now it's time. It's Mary Jo's turn to befuddle us with Meta OS or MetOS or Me Too OS. Or I don't know what.
I know.
How do you pronounce it?
Yeah. So this tells you how stories evolve these days on the web. So Saturday, our friend the Walking Cat finds a link to something called Microsoft Meta OS. And then he says, it's also called Taos, T-A-O-S. And so everybody starts scrambling, like, what is this? Are they building an OS? Oh, man, another OS, really? So everybody digs in. All of our friends start, like, looking. Taro Alhonen, who we talk about on the show a lot. Everybody's, like, looking for this. Like, everyone's crazy in the career site, looking, right? So then we find out, yes, Zach Bowden from Windows Central says Meta OS and Taos are the same thing. And what they seem to be at the highest level is the Fluid Framework. So Fluid Framework is the way that Microsoft's improving the speed and the way that people can collaborate within documents. Remember, we've talked about this on Windows Weekly a few times. So by improving co-authoring performance and making it so that pieces of your documents are components, you can have documents with embedded things like an Excel table or a Word document that's always up to date because of how fast you're co-authoring. So that's what it is at the highest level. But to make this happen and to enable this, we've really never known how is Microsoft actually doing this, you know, under the covers or on the back end. It turns out they're building a whole new distributed layer that's going to run on top of SharePoint and OneDrive, and it looks kind of like an operating system, right? So at the foundational level, they're building this layer. And then on top of that, you're going to have Fluid Framework. And so the idea is by having this like meta layer or meta OS layer, that you're going to make it better for everyone who needs to collaborate within first party and third party applications going forward. That's what meta OS is, I think. So Microsoft obviously didn't want this to get out or intend for this to get out. Maybe it's an Ignite announcement for next month. But yeah, that's kind of how the sausage was made on this.
is substrate, is that like cellulite? What are we talking about here?
So there's a thing that Microsoft calls the substrate. And Jeffrey Snover, our friend and distinguished engineer at Microsoft, was working on this until he recently took a new job at Microsoft. So the substrate is basically another kind of a layer. And the Meta OS is going to be on top of this as well. And that layer, the substrate, is where all the like meta information from documents is stored. It's basically a storage layer for services and files. And last year at Ignite, when Jeffrey Snover did a whole presentation on Microsoft Mechanics about the substrate, he compared the Office 365 substrate to Windows. He actually said, if you look at the substrate and you look at Windows, they have the exact same layers in them, and it's kind of like an OS. Maybe that's why it's called
Meta OS.
What's
the support life cycle of the substrate?
Is it going to be? Let's not get too crazy here.
Hi, Leo. I'm calling from Iowa. I have version 1803 of the substrate.
Oh, and I'd Lord. Like to know when it's going to become the Meta OS.
Oh, Lord.
No. So this is just like, I love this kind of stuff because I love like architectural diagrams and code names. So this for me was like pure fun on Saturday. I'm like, ooh, let me get in there and dig in with all the guys who are like looking for all the code names.
And what do you think? Yeah. Is it Meta OS or Meet?
I think
it's,
yeah. So I found a job description at Microsoft for it that listed it as capital E, lowercase capital M, lowercase E.
Yeah.
And then T-A capitalized. So like M-E-T-A.
My guess is they added me to it because it made it into Meta.
Yeah, because Taos is also, I mean, it is Taos, right?
Obviously, yeah. Taos is a place. I mean, so
it's
maybe
me,
the original
Taos.
Name was Taos. And then someone was like, hey, this thing is deals with metadata.
Yeah.
Let's change it.
Let's call it Meta OS because that sounds so cool, right?
Yeah, but it's not an OS, so that's
it's not an OS. It's a layer.
Not an OS. That's what that's.
It's a layer. It's a distributed foundational layer on top of SharePoint, OneDrive, the substrate, and it runs on Azure.
I think
that's perfectly clear. I'm
oddly
surprised.
Excited perfectly about clear. This, Mary Jo.
I am. This is the kind of stuff. You know how you guys geek out on disk management systems?
Yeah, this is your thing.
I geek out on this.
Okay. Fair enough.
Geek out is a strong term. I
come enough. On. Okay. You were geeking out on it. You guys were all in.
I was excited, actually, when I read this. Unfortunately, it's only on the web. But I love the idea that I could upload an audio file and it will be transcribed in Word, or I could record directly into the web version of Word and it will transcribe.
Yep.
This is a nice feature. This is on Android. They have an auto captioning feature, but I think this is a nice idea. So tell me about this. What is this?
Okay. So this is called Transcribe in Word. First coming to Word on the web, like you just said. Later coming
Which is
to...
odd.
I know. Uh-huh. Later coming to Office Mobile. So it'll be on Android by the end of the year, right? So what this does is just what you just said. You can upload a recording or record directly inside of Word and then have it automatically transcribe for you. And it will also separate the transcription by speaker. It won't put the...
That's the what Wi-Fi does to you. Right, she'll catch up in a second.
When that happens, I'm just always happy that it's not me.
I don't know if she can hear us or not, but right. Mary Jo, you're breaking up.
I mean, we get better communications from the Voyager probe.
You know? This is, I think it's down to 8-bit. Yeah, call her back. Let's see if we can call her back. She's breaking up, Captain.
Well, while this is happening.
Yes.
I will say that I've tried this thing. And I chose something interesting to use because I literally had found out that I was getting the Galaxy Note 20 to review. So I thought, well, I'll go back and rewatch this presentation that they did, the Unpacked presentation.
Uh-huh.
And and then I saw that they were making this feature available in Word for the web. And I thought, well,
let's try.
I'll take the audio from that and I'll put it into this and see how it does it.
Yeah.
And my first reaction was it took a long time. So it is a 90-minute recording. It took about 10 minutes less than that to transcribe it. But actually, when you think about it, it's transcribing text. I mean, how fast could it go? The other thing that's interesting about that event, if you watch it, is most of those people are not Americans. Actually, none of them are almost none of them are Americans. So English is a second language for most of them, but they're delivering it in English. So you would think like this transcription thing might have some issues with some of these people, but honestly, it did pretty good. I ended up cropping it down to just the part about the phone, and that's a much shorter thing, obviously. But yeah, they did a good job of separating out the speakers from different speakers. And there were some parts where you kind of look at it like, what are they saying, you know, based on the transcription? And I would go to that point in the audio and listen to it. And it's like, yeah, that's what it sounds
exactly
like to me, too.
I have
no idea what they're saying. Well, there was one guy, it was like a designer guy who was saying something like the one something something the one. And I thought, there's no way that's what he said. But when I listened to it, it's like, yeah, that's what it sounds like. I don't know.
That's weird.
Yeah. So it did a pretty good job.
Have you ever used the Android auto captioning feature? Because that is really kind of miraculous. And that's in real time.
That's right. And there's real time captioning in a few different places, like Skype and Teams do that as well. And then, Android just does it now in Android, which is really cool. Right. And it's a system feature you can kind of turn on.
This might be, this is actually faster than real time, though, because it's 10 minutes. To do what an hour,
right?
Or two
it actually, I know. So maybe I don't know if they sped it up or I don't know how they do it, but it didn't occur to me as I was waiting for it to finish that if you think about it, it should take as long as the recording.
Yeah, it should be in real time because it's
kind of
listen.
That kind of makes sense.
Yeah,
it took less than
that's impressive, actually. Yeah,
I thought so.
Yeah. And it was pretty accurate. Yeah, she's having trouble.
It was. And certainly, for the use, you think about who this is aimed at. So obviously journalists and students probably. If you're, the point of it isn't to take something you've never listened. Oh, actually, you could do that though. So but I guess that could be part of the point. But typically you're going to be taking notes normally while someone's speaking.
Yeah.
So this lets you not have to record every single thing that a person says or try to. And if you were paying attention to the talk, you go back later, you've got the audio and you've got the transcription. I mean, between those things, you should be able to figure out any things that aren't clear in the transcription. It was really good. And I mean, people are familiar with OneNote probably know. I mean, I think going back to almost the very beginning, there was a feature in OneNote that you could record a conversation. It didn't transcribe it, but you would take notes to the person talking, and if you selected a point in your notes, it would play the audio from that point. And so this is kind of like the next logical.
It's interesting.
Beyond that.
This is AI, obviously, and I presume gets better and better at it. And I think Microsoft's at pains to show that they can do. If Google can do it, we can do it, and I'm sure they can. Yeah,
it's nice. I mean, I'd like to see it in the depth.
Do you ever use in your workflow? I know. Was it Kevin Roos? Somebody at the Times was talking about his workflow where he would do an interview over the phone, he'd record it, and then he would send it over to a site called Otter, OTTER.AI, and transcribe it.
I've used Otter, I've used other services for this. And my wife does a lot more of that type of thing where she interviews people and then has to transcribe it.
Right.
And it's very common. So this, having it built into the application that you're writing in is ideal.
Nice. Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. I think we have Mary Jo back.
I'm back.
I don't know what happened. Did Sriracha get in the...
You were saying something about the Surface Duo and the bumper and you didn't put it on yet.
I'm on Wi-Fi because Windows 10 2004
doing something
isn't really working with my Ethernet now. Yeah. I don't know. The Wi-Fi just... Blah.
Apparently somebody just tried it on us, Paul, and I guess our voices are similar enough that we're both identified as speaker one.
Oh, really? Wow. That's weird.
I'll accept speaker 1B.
We're going to now see
there's some size limitations on this thing.
We did not talk about that.
I didn't notice until I used it. I don't think they mentioned that in the post.
I know. They updated their post, so it says... there's a 5-hour limit of transcription time per month for uploaded recordings. File size limit 200 megabytes, which isn't that big, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. And then, go ahead. I'm sorry.
Oh, they also said the audio recorded within Word is unlimited. So if you use Word to record the audio, you don't have that limitation. But if you try to upload a separate file, and then have it transcribe it, that's when you're subject to the limitations.
Okay.
I think it's very cool.
Yeah.
And then Immersive Reader, is this that Edge feature? What is this?
Yeah. So if you've used Microsoft Edge, you know that there is a feature called Immersive Reader where you can take any web document and it will play it, it will just read it to you.
Yeah.
And the voices have gone from being kind of robotic and fake to being actually pretty natural, and it's really cool. And there's also some reading comprehension things built into this where it can highlight each word as it goes, as it's speaking, and there's some other stuff too. And it's one of those neat features of Microsoft Edge. But the technology behind that, Microsoft is making it available now to developers through Azure.
Nice.
So they can add it to a third-party app, to their own apps, right? Nice. So if you have any app that has text in it or whatever, you could add this capability, make it more accessible to people who maybe they have reading disorders, or maybe they have vision issues, or whatever it might be. They can't read the text, or they find it easier to listen to it. You can add it to your own apps. That's cool.
Very nice.
Yeah. So I'm looking at this. I'd like to, maybe I can add it to my my Notepad app. And instead of reading to the app will read to you.
It's just the opposite nice. Direction of the first app
called Smirnoff joke. In Russia, Notepad reads to you.
You. So do you want to go into this latest on the... Nope.
Nope. No, let's not.
Let's not. Let's skip it. Let's just skip it. Jedi. Looks like another month before we'll figure out what's going to happen. This is the Pentagon contract. Microsoft won. Amazon sued. And it's going to be adjudicated in 30 days. That's actually kind of fast.
Well, it's been in limbo for months, right? Because of the back and forth, especially over, there's one part of Jedi that's about storage costs that the Pentagon wants to look back into and maybe rethink. So that's put everything back another 30 days. It was supposed to be announced August 17th, I think, who the actual winner is, even though Microsoft already won it.
You think there's any chance at all that Microsoft isn't going to win it?
No, I don't. I think what could happen is the storage piece might have to be rebid, but I think Microsoft will still be the winner. That's my two cents, but yeah.
Is it because Microsoft doesn't offer more than a terabyte of storage in Microsoft 365?
That's it.
There's no way we can do more. Sorry, Pentagon. Yeah. But you could get multiple accounts if each general gets their own account.
There was a tip on Windows Weekly about combining multiple accounts. Take advantage of that.
Yeah. Nice. Let's do some Xbox news. I presume Paul Thurrott, although you guys threw me a curve last time.
So August 2020 update is out for the Xbox. This adds some of the features that we mentioned last week that are coming also to the Xbox Series X. So it's not the full new dashboard with all the curved interfaces and stuff, but it is, I guess, some of it. I'm on the beta, so I have a hard time differentiating like what's new versus what's, because I looked at the picture, I'm like, I already have this, I don't understand what the, I don't know. So, but if you are in the Xbox Insider program, sometime in the next few days or weeks or whatever, you're going to get access to the full new dashboard. So that will, I'm sure, will be coming in by November, right, whenever the console ships. So that's coming. Epic and Apple are having a big battle in the courts, you may have seen or heard about, with regards to the recent, the most recent, well, actually now it's the second most recent court filing from Epic. They were asking for a preliminary injunction against Apple. And they won on two of the three counts, which is actually pretty good. But one of the companies that supported them, interestingly, was Microsoft. And specifically in this case, what they were supporting was the notion that cutting off access to the Unreal Engine in iOS would be a huge problem for third-party developers. And that was one of the things that the judge did rule on, that, you know, these developers would be victimized for nothing because these two giant companies are having a huge battle. And she is not allowing Apple to cut off access to that. So that's good.
She split the baby.
Yeah. Yeah. Was it not Herod? Who was the baby
Solomon.
Splitter in the...
Solomon.
Yes.
Yeah.
Split them down the middle.
Right down the middle.
Then just happened as the show was starting. It might have happened right after it started, but Activision has announced the next version of Call of Duty, which is Black Ops Cold War. It is coming in November. I think it's November 13th. Expressly against Microsoft's wishes, Activision is going to charge an upgrade fee if you want to go from a PlayStation 4 to a 5 or from an Xbox One to a Series X. So the way the game works is if you buy the normal edition, which is $60, it's only for that console. If you want to upgrade, if you go from the PS4 to the PS5, or you go up to, you know, from the Xbox One to the Series X, you can pay a $10 fee. If you know you're going to do that, you can pay it up front. And then there's an ultimate edition, because apparently they're getting their skew advice from Microsoft. And I don't even know what that includes. It's just in-game stuff. It doesn't look like anything important. But I'm very eager to see this. I'm not a big fan of the current Call of Duty game.
Really?
But I am a big
really? Fan
of the previous Black Ops. Yeah, I'm still playing Black Ops 4 right now. Huh. It just plays a lot better. It's a better game.
I did not know that. Do you think the new one will be better?
No.
It's going to be more of the same?
Why don't you like it? It's going to be based... There's something about the... You know, the game engine is different. So when you play a first-person shooter, there's a kind of a rhythm that you get into. And I, for whatever reason, in my case at least, I find it's laggier. And so if you play first-person shooters, you'll know the effect. Like you see a guy over there, you see he's going to shoot you, you go behind a wall, and then you die when you're behind the wall. To the guy who's shooting you, he shot you before you went behind the wall, and that's the lag. It's like a... There's no one true version of what happened, but to the person who got shot, that was unfair because I was behind the wall. And that happens a lot in Modern Warfare to me. It really bothers me.
Yeah, that is annoying.
It's really bad.
Yeah.
I mean, it's not a big deal, but it's a duller looking game. Like Black Ops 4 and the previous games were all very kind of HDR looking and colorful and kind of cool. They were nice. And this one's just, it's just sand colored. The whole thing, it's just, I don't know, it's kind of bland, but
all right,
I keep going back and try, you know, because they had maps and stuff. I wish I was playing it, but I just can't get into it.
Right. Let us take a break and then we will come back with the back of the book, tip of the week, pick of the week, code name, beer, you know, the usual, all the good stuff coming up next. First, a word from our sponsor, ZipRecruiter. More than a sponsor to us, it's where we go when we need people. The people you hire are the people that make or break your company. A company is just, it's made of people. And the right hire can just take, and I know this from personal experience, it makes everything work better. The wrong hire brings everybody down, even your best employees. That's why you need ZipRecruiter, especially today. Everything else in business is challenging today, but hiring, this is the one place where you can go where hiring is simple, it's fast, it's smart, it's ZipRecruiter, and you could try it free right now, ZipRecruiter.com/windows. It's a tough thing to be a small business person or even a big business person these days. Workplace safety, employees working at home, employees leaving, coming and going. When you want to find qualified candidates to fill those positions fast and you want to do it easy without another big burden on you, ZipRecruiter.com/windows. It starts because ZipRecruiter sends your job, your single job posting to them, to over 100 of the web's leading job sites. So you're immediately casting the widest possible net, but they don't stop there. Then they go and look because they have a lot of people come to them to apply for jobs too. So they have thousands and thousands of resumes, and they'll look at those with their matching technology, find people with the right experience, and then they invite them to apply to your job. So the job seekers love it. Hey, here's a job you might be the perfect fit for. You'll love it because you'll immediately start getting qualified candidates rolling in the door. And by the way, this doesn't mean phone calls. It doesn't mean your inbox fills up. It all goes into the ZipRecruiter interface. They pre-format the resumes so they're easy to scan. So it makes it very easy to screen your candidates, filter out ones that are inappropriate, and select the perfect candidate fast. You can review them and rate them. Boom, boom, boom. You've seen, I'm sure, on the ZipRecruiter ads on TV, some of the testimonials like Gretchen Huebner, who is at a company called Codable. You probably know Codable. She, of course, needed to do some hiring at the worst possible time right now. And she needed a game artist to take her ed tech company to the next level. Gretchen went to ZipRecruiter just as we do, and she was impressed just as we have been at how quickly they found quality candidates. In less than 2 weeks, Gretchen found her new game artist thanks to ZipRecruiter. In fact, it turns out 4 out of 5 employers, 80% of employers who post on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate within the first day. We got it within the first hour or two. It's really a kind of a, especially when you're, because you know when you lose somebody and you got to fill that position, you're kind of down in the dumps. It's going to be like, this is a lot of work. I got to go through, how long is it going to take? So when you start getting those great candidates and you look at these resumes so quickly, it just cheers you up. Makes you feel better. See why ZipRecruiter is effective for businesses of all sizes. Try ZipRecruiter free at ZipRecruiter.com/windows. 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 ZipRecruiter is the smartest way to hire. Honest. Now time for Paul Thurrott's tip of the week. Paul?
Yeah, I was thinking in the wake of the MFJ chat interview I did with Mary Jo a couple of weeks ago about learning and ongoing learning and formalized learning. And it occurred to me, you know, the most basic form, well, it's probably, there are probably more basic forms, I guess, but one of the more basic forms of learning is just reading, you know. And I read a lot, but I don't really specifically read to learn. And I was thinking, you know, maybe I could set aside time for this every day, like actually just read, you know. It doesn't have to be like a how to build a thing. It could be fiction or whatever, but just read, because I feel like we're like losing our ability
yes,
to read.
I agree. You know? Yeah.
And I've gone in and out of this. Like I've reread things like The Stand by Stephen King, which is fantastic. I got all the way through it. No problem. The Lord of the Rings, you know, a couple of years
ago.
You
like the long ones. Wow.
Yep. But then there were other books like It by Stephen King is terrible. Like I couldn't get to that. Tommyknockers is terrible.
That's, by the way, the corollary to this is if something's terrible, stop.
Yeah.
You don't have to finish everything.
Yes.
Yeah.
It took me a long time to learn that.
Yeah. So this is going to turn into like a small ad for something. Because one of the things I've learned, like I go back to these things I used to read when I was younger. Or watch TV shows. Like you showed a clip that was the Weezer thing, which has Happy Days clips in it. Happy Days is a terrible show.
Terrible.
But as a kid, I loved it. I mean, I loved it.
But if really you awful. Watch it now,
you'd hate yourself. It's
awful.
Terrible.
Yeah.
So there's a lot of stuff like this, like movies, TV shows, and books that I loved as a younger person. And today I read them. I'm like, what is going on? This is awful. And I've been trying to read some classic sci-fi that I used to read. So, you know, Asimov, Clark. Jerry Pournelle and Larry Niven, who were buddies, and a lot of this stuff is like, it's just smart people being smart. Like these guys are so smart, so all the characters
that's
are wicked
the whole
smart.
Thing. Yeah, yeah.
They're actually kind of hard to take. Some of them.
You know what I find does not age well is the Heinlein stuff.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Or the Dune Herbert. What's that guy's name?
I love Frank Herbert. You didn't like Dune?
Frank Herbert. No. I was going to say that's an example of one that is
that is aged. Good. Incredible. Yeah.
So one of the ones that really stands up is literally like the Lord of the Rings of science fiction is Foundation by Isaac Asimov.
I was just going to say that. And they're making it a TV show now.
Yeah, you know? I know, on Apple TV. You could have watched. So,
but read it before you watch the TV show, please.
I literally am going back and forth between the Kindle version and the Audible version I can be at the gym and listen to it or I can be home and read. And so like that's a good one. Like
is
that's
the Audible
a really
good
one. Yeah, it's Scott Brick.
I love him. They went back and recorded all of those.
I like his voice for some reason, but he did the Jurassic Park books, and he's good. I like Scott Brick.
I like I love him.
He's in my top 10. So yeah,
I'll have to get that.
Just go read something.
Yeah, read
you know? And try to develop it as a skill. So if you're older like we are, you might have lost this skill. If you're younger, you may literally have never developed it.
I can't. My eyes have gotten bad enough now that I have to do audiobooks. It's very hard for
me.
Really? Yeah.
What about Kindle?
Kindle's okay because it's lit and it can make the text bigger. But and it's not that my sight is so bad. It's just my eyes get tired very quickly and easily.
Oh, yeah.
And,
yeah. I can see that.
And
plus
audio
on the screen all day, right?
Yeah, that's the other thing. I'm looking at it. Yeah. I don't want to look more. So, right. But audiobooks are fine, and I really enjoy them. I've been reading. The problem is I don't have the long commute, so it takes me sometimes a month or two to read a book. But at least I read every day. I'm reading Eric Larson's.
I don't know what your life, you know, your schedule is or whatever. But I mean that, you know, you could say, look, I'm gonna have a half an hour.
Oh, I do that.
45 minutes.
Yeah.
Like I am.
Problem is I fall asleep. Immediately fall asleep.
There is nothing worse than waking up at 3 o'clock in the morning with an audiobook droning
then,
in your ear.
In conclusion.
Yeah, exactly. And then he killed the bad guy. Wait.
No, I don't want to. The other thing I would throw into this, and I think it was Brian Brushwood who told me this. He and Bonnie listened to The Martian. And so Lisa and I did that, and we've started. We pick a book the two of us can listen to together instead of watching TV together, and it's great.
Oh, you actually listen to it together.
To it together.
That's neat.
At the same time,
The Martian. If you have never listened to an audiobook, start with The Martian.
Good. Yeah. Yeah, so good. So that kind of got us. So we often say, okay, what are we going to, what's our next book? We actually did Stephen King's The Outsider, but then it became a TV show and we ended up watching that instead.
Yeah, which was great.
It was a good show.
And if you ever watched the Mr. Mercedes series,
which
was okay.
But we're enjoying it. Yeah, but I haven't read the book.
The TV version. The books are great.
Okay.
The TV version, okay.
Okay. I've got to do Foundation because another strict rule of mine is, science fiction is best in book form because your mind is going to build better sets than George Lucas can ever do.
Series.
Which one?
Dark Tower by Stephen King.
That goes on for a while.
Yeah, but that's the thing. So I actually don't like most of the later books, but the beginning of it, the very first book, is very much like the first Foundation.
Yeah.
Because it's a series of short stories that were written a long time ago.
Right.
They kind of turn into a story, but. Anyway, the first Foundation is very similar to the first Dark Tower book.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's great.
So before Foundation hits Apple TV, if you haven't read it.
I'm going to give you one more because you just said you make the stuff up in your mind. When I read this book originally in the 80s, actually, it wouldn't have been originally because I read it before this. But at one point, I reread these things, right? So at one point, I was rereading the Foundation, or maybe I was reading the later Foundation books. Foundation has a lot of stuff that appears later, like Trantor's Coruscant in Star Wars. It's the same planet. Like, it's exactly as he described it in the 1950s.
Right.
There's a musical artist called Peter Buffett, who is the son of Warren Buffett, who came out with a bunch of instrumental music, actually still making instrumental music, but he started doing this in the late 1980s. And his first album, to me, is literally the soundtrack to Foundation. The funny thing about that is it's actually meant to evoke Native American, not music, that world. But to me, what it sounded like was science fiction. And it has sounds that actually there are sounds in it that are very similar to the soundtrack from Shadow of the Beast, the Amiga game. But I literally have listened to that music again, rereading Foundation. Peter Buffett, The Waiting, it's called.
And if you're a Neil Gaiman fan, there is now an Audible, a really wonderful dramatization, because it's word for word of his comics, the Sandman comics, with great actors, and it's quite a show. It's a little busy, but it's quite a show. It's on Audible. It's the Sandman. Oh, highly recommended.
Heard of this.
Yeah, that's my problem. Is I want more time to read. Mary Jo, what do you? You must read books. You seem like a veteran reader.
I read a lot. Yeah. I don't read anything you guys read.
No science fiction.
Actually, I try to mix in some science fiction, and I was looking up what I just read. The problem with the Kindle is you forget who the authors are and what the covers of books look like, right? So you're like, what did I read?
It's all just
content. N.K. Jemisin, do you guys know who she is?
Oh, love N.K. Jemisin.
I had never heard of her, and then I found The 100,000 Kingdoms, and that was one of her first books, I believe.
Yeah, I'm trying to remember what I've
and
read
and I read
hers,
that, and I now I want to read more of hers because I thought that was really interesting. And right now I'm reading, what was the thing I was reading? The Night Circus, which is a book from 2011. It's a fantasy historical fiction novel by Aaron Morgenstern that is about a circus. But it's almost science fiction. It's pretty close to science fiction. So yeah, I definitely tend to fiction and mostly historical fiction in my reading.
Me too.
I try to mix in other things. So like biography, science fiction from time to time.
Yeah.
Yep. Yep.
Well, we're all readers, that's for sure.
Yeah. I read a lot. I read a lot on my Kindle.
Yeah. I have to try sometimes, though. Like, I find
you have to make time for it. It's too easy to watch TV. That's the problem.
It is. It's so easy.
It's way too easy.
You read these little things, and it's like, I want to read something substantial.
Yeah, I'm just finishing Eric Larson's The Splendid and the Vile, which I've mentioned before.
I was looking at that.
Love his stuff.
I don't know if I'd like it.
It's a little, it's history.
Have you read any Eric Larson?
Yeah. Devil in White City, I read.
Which is great.
Yeah, excellent. So read the one about Germany is amazing. Garden of Good and Evil, I think it's called, is one of the best books I've ever read.
It's funny. It's not The Garden of Good and Evil,
which
is another book, but it's like that. It's like yes, it's very close.
What's the name of it? The real name of it?
Is it?
I can't remember.
I can look it up, obviously.
Yeah, if you look up Eric Larson, you'll find it.
Yeah.
Something very similar.
He doesn't have that many books. I think he's a good...
Yeah, the current one that you're reading, I read an excerpt of it. I'm like, I don't think that's for me.
It might be a little drier than his other stuff, yeah. Which I really, I like his other stuff a lot.
Oh. In the Garden of the Beast.
That's
the
it.
Gardens of Beast.
That's yeah. it. Yeah. Yeah. But Midnight in the Garden of Good and Evil is another very, very good book, but not by Eric Larson. Yeah.
Okay. Good to know.
Yeah. But my advice is always read the book if you can before you see the movie or the TV show, because I just feel like almost always the book's better.
Well, if you like a movie, though, right, like the book will expand on it. And that's kind of a cool way to do it, too.
Yeah, because it's a spoiler either way. So it's just a question of which way you like to be spoiled. For instance, I'm really glad I read The Life of Pi before I saw the book The Life of Pi. I mean, the movie The Life of Pi, because the book was like 1,000 times. I would have been very disappointed if I'd gone.
Oh, really? Wow.
Yeah, the book is incredible. But it has a very surprising end. And I won't say anything more. I won't say anything more. But if you haven't, and by the way, that's an excellent Audible book. That title is very well read. Mm-hmm. Oh my! This pick of the week, this tip of the week, got long. Let's do an app. Let's do an app pick of the week, Paul.
I know. I just spent a bunch of time. I mean,
I did it to you. We expanded.
Yeah, no, it was fun.
So this isn't in the notes, but if you're using Curtains, which is that Stardock utility for theming Windows 10, right, which is really cool themes like the Windows XP theme and so forth. There's a 1.1 beta out now that you as a Curtains user can get for free if you want to try it out early. One of the reasons you might want that is it adds transparency to the background of Explorer windows, which is kind of cool. So anyway, that's, you know, Curtains is $9.99 if you don't have it. But it's a really, you should check it out if you like customizing the UI. It's a really good one. And then Mozilla this week is releasing over time. I think it's coming out in the United States and Canada tomorrow or sometime this week, but it is out in Europe now. The new version of Firefox for Android. So this is completely rewritten. There's some pros and cons to that. They've lost whatever support they had previously for the old extension system, I think, is gone. I was really intrigued to see one of the things that's going on. Well, I should say two of the things. One is, I think, Leo, you had mentioned you were using Firefox Focus on mobile. They brought that functionality into this app, which is pretty
good.
Cool.
Yeah.
But they're also using their own rendering engine, and I didn't think that was possible on mobile, on Android, I should say. So, in other words, instead of using Blink, they're using whatever their thing is called, Gecko HTML or whatever. So if you're a Firefox fan, especially, you might definitely want to check this out because it's like this completely rewritten from the ground new version of Firefox, but only on Android.
Cool.
At least for now.
Very cool. Let's do an enterprise pick of the week. Mary Jo Foley.
So this is very odd and interesting. Today, when Microsoft announced those two Windows 10 tester updates, they announced for the first time in maybe a year what is in the new Windows Server update that is accompanying these updates. Ew. Yeah. So we keep asking, what's in the new Windows Server test build? We don't have anything to share. Okay. Well, people are testing it, but that's great. So today they released Windows Server vNext build 20.201, which means it's the FastRing dev channel equivalent. But what's interesting about that is when you are talking about the Windows 10 client and you're talking about the dev channel, those features are not pinned to a specific release. In other words, they could show up anywhere. They might show up in the next build of Windows 10. They might be in a back build. We don't know. But this seems like this 20.201 server build seems to be a very specific targeted build that I believe is going to be out early next year, because they're calling it the next long-term servicing channel release of server, which means the set of features that they describe in this are pinned to a specific release that's going to be out at a set time. So that means, now kind of thinking back as I'm talking about this live, that means server is actually still on the, you know, first half, second half schedule. And they're right now, if you're in the testing program for server, you're testing what will likely be 21H1 server, and that will be an LTSC release of server. So the list of features is very, very geeky and specific. I'm not going to detail them here. They're things like MS Quick, UDP performance improvements, TCP performance improvements, RSC in the vSwitch, whatever that means. so if you care about server, you probably will want to go look at that Microsoft post today and see what is coming in the next release.
RSC and the VMV and the DDV.
I know. And the I'm like, is this like a rap song? Or like, what is it?
I love it. And from, I think this is from Fellini, comes our code name of the week.
So Paul is going to do this because.
Oh am I? I was just suggesting it. I don't have to do it.
No, I liked it. I liked your suggestion. So go ahead.
Oh, okay. I wasn't sure where to fit this in, but Microsoft released TypeScript 4.0 this week.
And very exciting.
Oddly enough, TypeScript 4.0 is not actually a major release.
Oh.
But in the years since they released TypeScript 3.0, they've made many, many changes to TypeScript. And the culmination of it is this thing that is actually kind of a big deal since 3.0. But I didn't know this. I had to go look this up. But the original code name for TypeScript was Strata, I guess. Is that how you say this?
Yeah,
it was
TypeScript.
Yep. And do you know Italian what that for road?
I don't know what that means.
It's Italian for road.
Road. Oh, there you
interesting.
Go.
Interesting. So one of the main, besides Anders Heilsberg, one of the main developers on TypeScript was technical fellow Steve Luco. So maybe Steve Luco had something to do with.
Maybe he's Strata. A nice Italian boy, huh?
You know, if JavaScript was a potholed nightmare full of puddles and stuff. TypeScript is a nicely paved
road.
Yeah,
it's a typed JavaScript, which I think everybody agrees is 10 times better than JavaScript.
I was just playing around with this. It's pretty cool if you haven't done this. The TypeScript compiler basically creates the JS file for you, right? So it's a way to, as you write, make sure you're being type safe, and then it just outputs standard JavaScript.
Nice.
So smart. Anders is amazing. Good? I'm surprised. Yeah.
I know. He is.
He deserves.
It's what we need.
That guy has two programming languages in the top 10 right now, C# and TypeScript. Popularity. Nice. It's amazing. Nice. Think about that.
Yeah. TypeScript is pretty impressive, I think.
Yeah.
Well, you guys did such a good job today. I think I'm going to allow you one beer each.
Can I take mine in the form of a cocktail?
This is not alcoholic, which is hysterical.
Right.
Can I take mine in the form of a
cocktail? So this isn't a beer either. This is not a beer, and it's not alcoholic. So a double whammy here, guys.
I like
guys,
this but... a lot, though. I really like this idea. Because I don't. Yep. I want to have an adult beverage, but I don't want to drink.
Yes. So in the old days, if you had a non-alcoholic beer, a non-alcoholic cocktail, they were pretty terrible. Like, they were trying to do with sugar and, like, a lot of additives, things to make it taste like alcohol, right?
Right.
But now there's this whole new generation of non-alcoholic beers and cocktails that taste amazing.
Shrubs. Have you ever had a shrub?
Yes, like a shrub.
Yeah.
Yep. So there's a company in Hudson Valley, New York called Curious Elixirs. And I just recently ordered some of their non-alcoholic cocktails to try because I get a lot of requests from listeners for, you know, I can't drink or I don't want to drink. What could you recommend? I would recommend these. These are made with juices, natural herbs, all kinds of substances that are good for you.
This is what I want. This is perfect.
Yep. And they taste like things like Negronis and Dark and Stormies. And they come prepackaged in a bottle that will make two or three cocktails. So you just tip the bottle lightly, add some ice, add some seltzer if you would like, and voila, you have this amazing, very tasty cocktail.
Yeah. Would you compare these favorably to the real thing?
I would.
Without the alcohol. Of course, you could always add the alcohol, I guess.
Yeah,
you
one thing we've tried is alcohol, like simple sugars that are not made of sugar, like sugar-free simple
That's
sugars.
A good idea, yeah.
Yep.
Yeah, they're not, they have a weird, you know, they're a little
the
weird.
The sugar
they
alcohols, have a taste, which a lot of these use, have this weird menthol-y thing going on.
Yeah.
And that bothers me, yeah.
Yeah, so the thing that also works in these is they taste bitter. And that's a key element of cocktails, right? And
that's right.
It's hard to simulate bitters because bitters have alcohol in them without using bitters.
Yep.
So they use things like rhubarb extracts. Like they use bitter herbs and substances.
So this is the miracle meat of cocktails, like the you know, the meat that you know uses like a beet to simulate blood or something. And
yes.
So
yeah, I've tried two of the types, and I was very favorably impressed by these.
Curious number one is a bitter pomegranate cocktail inspired by the Negroni.
That's the one I've tried.
but designed to lift you up with rhodiola infused with Damiana. So these are herbs, I guess.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. Curious number two is the spicy love child of the pineapple margarita and a dark and stormy. That sounds good to me.
Margarita.
Curious number three is a beautiful blend of lemon, cucumber, alpine herbs, and ashwagandha. Curious number four is, so I'm gonna, this is the variety pack. It's not,
yeah, you can
it's
get a variety
cheap,
pack. Or,
but it's 24 cocktails for $79, so it's cheaper than booze.
Yeah.
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 I just
it's
went
not
for
cheap,
my
but try it.
Yeah. Then they said drink more.
No, I talked to him, you know, knowing that I was going to say, look, you know, I don't know if you know, this is a pandemic. I've been eating and drinking more than usual.
Yes.
And she says, yeah, everyone is. Don't worry about it.
Yeah, that's what my doctor said, too.
Like,
oh, you
what?
Got the COVID-19.
I'm like, you're a doctor. Yeah. What are you doing?
Everybody's sick.
Like, no, tell me I need
drinking
to drink
more
less.
Than we should.
Everybody's
like,
doing
I'm
it.
Just really looking for some some advice.
Did they say drink? Did she say drink less?
No, she never said that. That's a
I think they just want us all to make it through, right?
They do. At this point, you know, your mental state is so much more important than a couple extra pounds.
You look great the way you are. Don't worry about it.
Exactly.
My mom, who's 87, has told me this.
I was wheeled in here by a guy in a pickup truck.
I know. I can't walk. You look good, though. you never good. Know. My mom has been told this five or six. She's told me this five or six times. Once her doctor said, oh, no, it's good for you to have that extra weight, because if you go to the hospital, a lot of older people, they're too thin.
Oh, my God. If you get sick, you can work off your body fat?
Yes.
That's great.
Oh, my God.
She's embraced this, by the way. Who knows if the doctor ever really said it, but she has embraced this wholeheartedly.
Is this the doctor from, like, the police academy movies? What are you talking about? That's crazy. Oh, no.
She's 87. No. I think the doctor's saying don't worry.
I think she can do what she wants.
She can do what she wants. She's 87. Yeah. She's obviously, whatever she's been doing is working. She's in excellent health.
Yep.
So just, you know, just
that's
hang
amazing.
In there. Yeah. Yeah.
So this is just one type of this cocktail.
I've just joined their cocktail club.
Nice. So this is the New York State one, but there's, if you look up these kinds of craft non-alcoholic cocktails are everywhere now.
Oh, yeah.
You could try them closer
We have
to
a
home.
Place we go up in Healdsburg that we love and a wonderful bartender, and they do shrubs.
Oh, nice.
Which are basically herbal beverages with seltzer. Yeah. It sounds like it's very similar to this, actually.
It does.
It's just another name for it. Sometimes there are sticks of things in the shrub. Maybe that's where the name came from.
It's fresh.
It's fresh.
It's leaves.
Like you get sand in a clam. You're like, it's fresh.
It's fresh. That's how you know. What fun. I will have, if this comes by next week, I will have a curious elixir right here. Ready to
buy. I just forwarded this to my wife. We'll see what she comes up with.
I want to have an adult beverage. And I go, oh. And we have a liquor cabinet, which never goes anywhere because I don't drink. You know, I made your fabulous Sacchettini once.
Yep.
So now I have all the ingredients.
Oh, I've made it more than once this week.
I don't like getting tipsy. I don't have enough brain cells to spare. So it would be nice to have an adult beverage that's not alcoholic, that's just kind of refreshing. And it's more a social thing.
It is. Right?
Yeah.
Yep.
Plus, actually, if you had a get together, you could serve this and see if anyone even noticed.
They may not notice. Yeah. Or I could put some booze in it and they'd be happy.
Yep.
Actually, I bet you could put booze in it, right?
Yeah, you could for sure.
And then it's basically a mixed drink that you just add liquor to. So if I had Craven, I could do that.
Interesting.
Folks, you can tell we're kind of lonely. So please come back.
We're all reading and drinking and stuff.
Reading and drinking all those things our parents did. We never understood why. Now we know. We do Windows Weekly every other Wednesday around 11 a.m. Pacific, 2 p.m. Eastern time. That'd be 1800 UTC. If you want to watch us do it live, you can. Because we just stream everything we do. It's kind of the making of behind the scenes video. That's at twit.tv/live. There's audio streams and video streams there. If you're doing that, the chat room is also live. Well, most of the time. Sometimes I wonder. They're at irc.twit.tv, irc.twit.tv. You can join them there. It's family friendly and a good place to hang out with geeks of a similar stripe. We also have on-demand versions of everything because it is, after all, a podcast. So you could go to twit.tv/ww and watch any show in the complete collection of 687. You could go to our YouTube channel for Windows Weekly or the general YouTube channel, which has links to all the others at youtube.com/twit. And, of course, because it's a podcast, there's an RSS feed. That means you can use any podcast client to subscribe, Spotify, Overcast, Shoutcast, Google's podcast, Apple's podcast. It'd be a really nice thing to put on your Duo. You don't know how the speakers are on that yet either. I'd love to know what those
are. I don't know yet.
Yeah. But do subscribe. That way you'll get it the minute it's available of a Wednesday.
You could have one podcast on one screen and another on the other.
Wouldn't that be cool? Go back.
You could listen.
Forth.
You could read the audiobook for Foundation and listen to Peter Buffett on the other screen.
How about that? How much we're talking.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. That's Paul Theriot. He's at Theriot.com. His books are at leanpub.com, including The Field Guide to Windows 10, recently updated for 20.04. Catch that over there at leanpub.com. Mary Jo Foley is at ZDNet, allaboutmicrosoft.com. And we will see you too. Stay safe, stay healthy, and have a virgin Negroni on me. That doesn't sound quite right. I'll see you next week on Windows Weekly. Bye-bye.
Hey, what's going on, everybody? I am Ant Pruitt, host at Twit TV. Got a question for you. Have you gotten tired of how bad your photos are looking every time you post them to Instagram? Better yet, have you gotten yourself a new camera and you can't quite figure out why the images just don't look that good? Well, I have a solution for you. It's my show, Hands On Photography. Each and every Thursday, I sit down and share different tips and tricks that are going to help make you a better photographer and a better post processor. So subscribe today at twit.tv/hop to learn more.